Good morning. You're listening to Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. I'm your co-host, James Parker. Coming up on the show today, this is a three-hour version. If you're just joining us from the weekday version, because I invited you the last couple of days, welcome. A little bit different here. We focus a little bit less on the immediate news and changes in the market of the day. Hey, because the market's closed today, why not? We do a little more long view stuff and take some more calls. We have some more guests, and including Dwayne Stein. He's going to be our guest from the Total Wealth Authority this week, coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. And we're in a weird spot because home ownership rates are at 50-year lows, but new home sales are increasing, and the median price of these new homes is increasing. So there's some good news, and there's some bad news. We'll run it through his filter. We also have to tell you about some community events coming up I think you'll be interested in. We're going to break down the jobs report in a more thorough fashion than we did on the weekday version of the show. And if you have a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, you better give us a call, 504-260-0995. You can also float in your message via Facebook if you'd like. Gregory Rick's still out on assignment. I expect him back any second now. But in the meantime, if you want to give me a call, I can at least give you a little bit of guidance, even though I don't have nearly the supercomputer of financial knowledge that that man has lugging around on his shoulders. I can give it a good shot. So in the news this week, the big story is how well our stock market did. The S&P was up. Dow finally broke its losing streak. NASDAQ was on somewhat of a winning streak. It dipped, but bounced back. So the positive news is outweighing the negative news. And this all comes on the heels of yesterday's jobs report, where unemployment stayed the same. But there's some mixed information bubbling under the surface. Overall, I would say this was a positive jobs report, but just barely. Job growth is there, but it is still weak. If you listen to the perma bears or people who have a political axe to grind, they'll say that we are continuing the weakest recovery that we've ever had since 1949. And while that's true, hey, we're still in recovery. At least we're not in recession. At least we are growing some jobs out there, even though it's just barely keeping up with our population growth. And so 4.9% unemployment, usually not something to complain about. But there is a legitimate place for the criticism of how the number got that low. A big chunk of it was people just not looking for jobs anymore. Now, some of the reason you're seeing the abnormally high number of people who are leaving the workforce or not counted as unemployed, even though they would like to have a job, is because we had some folks retiring. The baby boomers turned full retirement age starting just a couple years ago. So you're going to see a natural demographic shift, but not to the tune of what we've seen. It not a 3% drop in labor force participation rate. We got 0.1% of that back over July. So that's I believe 2 weeks in a row, or 2 months in a row, we've bounced off of that all-time low. So there's a little good, a little bad, and it makes it really tough to actually get some solid analysis, because so many people have their preconceived notions of what it's going to be. One side of the aisle, no matter what pumps out, they're going to focus on the good news. The other side of the aisle, no matter what the report says, they're going to focus on the bad news. A little bit of both. My concern, though, and look, I'm glad to see more people employed, and it doesn't too much bother me that about half of, or about a third of the new jobs created were part-time. That's just part of the new gig economy. For me, I see that's how people are working around these new costs that are being put upon employers for each employee. You know, it's not just the Affordable Care Act, and it's not just all these other benefits. There's all kinds of taxes and things that you can get around, and it's just smart sometimes to either be a contract employee, be a part-timer, do some 1099 action rather than take on a full-time employee. My concern on the other end, though, is the long-term unemployed. That's going up. The short-term unemployed, boy, they're really churning it out. If you can manage to be unemployed for less than 6 months, you're in a good spot. But something about that six-month time range, if you've been unemployed for that long, chances are you're going to continue to be unemployed a lot longer. And that's kind of disappointing, because we see those numbers also skew a little older. And one of the scary numbers you look at is how hard is it? How much longer are you unemployed if you lose your job past a certain age, age 50 or 55, or depending on what rundown you're trying to look up by whatever columnist and whatever financial publication? That's where the concern is. Because your peak earning years for most people is in the 40s and 50s. Once you start to get out of that era, if you lose your job, there is a very good likelihood that the next job you have is going to pay you less. You're not used to that. I'm not used to that. Most of us went from job to job with a slight increase in pay on the way up, or some other benefit was thrown in there. Maybe you had a better schedule. Maybe it was a better title. Maybe it was more amenable working hours that could accommodate your family. Maybe it was all kinds of benefits attached to it. But going in the other direction is something that takes a little bit of adjustment, because now what do you have to do? Are you going to reduce your lifestyle accordingly? Oh, that's tough to do. What do you can't shave off a piece of your house. So that's something we struggle with here at Gregory Ricks and Associates, and dealing with people who have those issues. And it just feels bad. It's like, hang on, how can I be worth $120,000 last year, but I'm only worth $85,000 this year? Did I get dumber? Did my skills evaporate? Am I really in that much less of a demand? So it's an ego thing, too. And it's so hard to just take that notch down when you think, if I hold out a little bit longer, maybe I can get the salary I want. I think that's what a lot of people are doing. So the jobs report has some mixed numbers for both folks. If you want to take a look at the U6 number, that counts people who are working part-time for economic reasons, not because they want to, and the long-term unemployed and discouraged workers. A lot of people like to focus on that, but it seems a little fudge these days as well. If you want to look at the household data, the number of people not in labor force is what I want to start with. They took 184,000 people off the rolls. Now, that sounds like a nice giant jump, but we still have more people not in the labor force for July of 2016 than we had of July of 2015. Now, of course, population went up quite a bit since then, but greater than the rate of population increase. It went from 93.7 million in July of 15 people not working to 94.3 million people out of the labor force in July of 2016. Now, again, some of those are retirees, but that doesn't explain all of it. We have just some people who quit looking. They've been unemployed so long and they can't find the job that they want that they're just forget it. I'm going to sit on the couch, wait for a job to come to me. Overall, though, that number stayed at a nice, pretty 4.9%. The number of people who gain jobs, 420,000 is what it looks like on this report. The number you're seeing actually reported is 255, because they have to subtract out some other people here and there and new people coming into the labor force. So that number gets a little mishmashed up, because that's the net job creation. The gross job creation, though, 420,000. If we can keep that up, which should be kind of a tough task, we'll be fine. But the numbers underneath, before you even know them, you know there has to be something going wrong somewhere, because 2 weeks ago, the Federal Reserve looked at the condition of our economy and didn't think it could handle a federal funds rate of 0.75%. That is still a historically market bottom, artificially depressed interest rate, and a weak economy should be able to handle that. They didn't think we could handle that. So just keep that in mind. No matter what the positive MO is, don't listen to what they tell you. Listen to what they're doing. Did the Fed raise that interest rate? They see weakness. 504-260-0995 if you want to be a part of the show. Continue breaking down the news of the week. And I'm going to tell you a story about how Trent Richardson, that University of Alabama running back that used to crush us, he's having a tough time in the NFL, and some people are spending his money that he didn't see. That story's coming up next. I'm James Parker. It's Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. Welcome to Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. I am your host, James Parker. Gregory Ricks out on assignment. We'll be back on Monday. Better be back on Monday, because I'm going to be gone on Monday. Someone's going to have to talk into this microphone. And cleaning up the aftermath of the jobs report that was released yesterday for the month of July 2016. Let's break down the numbers a little further. See, this is what I like about the Saturday version of the show. We have a little time to stretch our legs and look under the surface. By the way, our next Gregory Ricks live event coming up August 16th. That's a Tuesday. Not this coming Tuesday, but next. It's going to be at Ruth's Chris in Metairie, 6:30 p.m. And you go out there. Why should you go to a Gregory Ricks Live event? Well, philosophical compatibility. It's like a first date. It is essential. It is essential to picking the right advisor. How do you know if we're right for you? And then we got to find out if you're right for us. So we kind of spell out our philosophy in a presentation. If it looks like something that you're lined up with well, then you eat some food and then set an appointment for later. That's all. No one's going to try and sell you anything, but this month's charity is Team Gleason. More about that coming up in the next segment. We're going to be reviewing our next Gregory Ricks Live event. So in the discussion we were having about the unemployment numbers, the jobs numbers coming out of July, I think there was more good than bad here, but still very tepid. This wasn't a go out, pop the champagne bottles and start dancing in the street kind of jobs report. It just wasn't negative. It was just on the right side of the number line from zero. So we'll take it. Slow growth is better than no growth and a whole lot better than recession. But this is indicative of what we've been seeing for about the last 6 years, ever since the unemployment peaked at about 10.8. Wait, what was the peak? 10.1% for this guy? So job losses were profound when it comes to logging, construction, and construction. Manufacturing grew by 9,000. A big chunk, though. You're going to see most of professional and business services leading the way. 70,000 new positions. Healthcare, which has had strong job growth over the last 3 years, 43,000. Wall Street jobs increased by 18,000. And then you start to get down into some of the lower jobs like leisure and hospitality. It was a big contributor to job growth, 45,000, and that's a big number, but that's not really the kind of jobs that a robust economic expansion is built on. These are the ones that people complain about. These are the part-time jobs or the minimum wage jobs or the low-wage jobs or the no-skill jobs. And they're doing well, and there's nothing wrong with them doing well. We just need the other sectors doing better, too. Manufacturing grew by 9,000. Full-time positions grew by about 300,000. Part-time, about 150,000. And I'm using estimates here so we can go through this pretty quickly. As far as revisions go, there's some more good news to be had in there. May's pathetic 11,000 number. Remember when it was first reported how many jobs were created in May? We found out the first Friday of June. The original number reported was 38,000. And then when the June jobs report came out in July, they revised that down to 11,000. Now that the July report came out in August, they've revised that back up. But just 24,000. I mean, that is still a pathetic number. We laugh at that number. It went from 38,000 to 11,000, now 24,000. That's just zero. It's right there, 24,000. So the June number actually got revised up a little bit too. Now, it was even stronger than this month, 287,000. It got bumped up to 292,000. That's where we need to start being. We need to start being above that 300,000 number before we can actually feel the economic expansion. And, you know, if you go read the Perma Bears and the negative nillies out there, they say, you know, when you count the number of created jobs, you're not really counting the number of employed persons because some people have more than one job. Yeah, well, we know what that's like. I don't know. I think that 4.9 number is a little relaxed, but it's not any more relaxed than the 4.9 number was last month. But remember, what was the number in May? Just as recently as May, that number was 4.7% unemployment. So, you know, we're staying down there. A year ago, 5.3% unemployment. If you have to ask, if you ask me, if we still counted unemployment about the same as we did 10 years ago, I would think that the number would be closer to about 7%. And that's what it feels like. Doesn't it feel like about 7.5% unemployment? Not disastrous, not bad, but not full employment and not low unemployment. It feels about average. If you want to go across the sea, though, you'll see what real unemployment looks like. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, because I looked this up during the week and can't remember the number exactly, but I think Spain went back over 20% unemployment. And that's not really an unusual number for those guys. In fact, they get up to 25-28%. When times were rough, because we've been doing the show for 6 years and watching overseas for a while. Isn't that just a foreign concept? 20% unemployment? You know what we call that in Spain? That's a regular old economy. That's kind of a slow recovery. We call that the Great Depression. That's what we call 20% unemployment. So as much as we like to gripe about things over here in the United States, boy, they sure are doing a lot better than the rest of the world. And can we stop trying to copy Europe for 5 seconds? They have 20% unemployment in some of those countries. You know, so can we just do our own thing and not worry about what sort of benefits and how much vacation time and what amenities and what all services they get for free over there? I would rather have a job. I would rather have a job than paid maternity leave. I would rather have a job than 4 weeks of vacation or a 35-hour work week. Because what good does 4 weeks of vacation do you if you don't have a job? Hell, every day's a vacation then. So that ought to about wrap that up. Now, do you remember Trent Richardson? I know that name sounds familiar. Football fans definitely know him. He was a running back for the University of Alabama. And he and Nick Saban came through and just throttled us for the couple years he was over there at Alabama. I think he did 3 years there. And he left at the time. He was their single-season rushing leader. He had set the record for that. But I think someone subsequently broke it. I mean, it never ends over at Alabama. It went from Mark Ingram to Trent Richardson to the next guy. They always have some guy that's just going to run it down your throat. But for 3 years, Trent Richardson was the guy. He got drafted by the Browns, went and had a stellar rookie season. I believe he led rookies in rushing yards for, what would that be, 2013? And there were some off-the-field problems that he had that after he started the next season, he ended up getting traded over to the Colts. He didn't last too long there. An injury kind of cut him short. He got picked up by the, I believe it was the Ravens, and they just let him go because he blew out his knee. So now he's got to have surgery, rehab the knee, and try and get back into the NFL. Problem is, most of that money he already made got spent. And we love telling these stories. We told the story a few months ago about how Shaq, when he got his first $1 million, he spent it all in 1 day. In fact, he went over $80,000 in 1 day. Now, it's a little bit different for Shaq because he knew there was going to be a ton more money coming in, and that was just from an endorsement contract, and he hadn't even been drafted yet, so he knew he wasn't out of money. Trent Richardson, though, story is a little more indicative of what most guys go through. Trent Richardson only had a 3-year NFL career thus far. He may be back in, but out of the liquid assets, the money that he could actually spend, he found out that there was $1.6 million, poof, it's gone, missing. And a lot of that's due to his background. You hear this story over and over. Trent Richardson grew up in the Pensacola area. And not the fun beach part when you cross the bridge back to the mainland and they just have a regular old, dirty, small town. I mean, you see him over and over, raised by a single mom, had brothers and sisters. Mom was one of those that took in stray kids from around the neighborhood. So at some points, they had 7 kids living in this house with one single mother who had 2 jobs. So when this extended family sees one of their own rise to the top, they all grabbed onto those coattails. And when he was when he bought his nearly $1 million mansion in Cleveland to go play with the Browns, when he was only there for not even 2 years, a lot of people came with him. And he was telling the story. I saw this on the E60, one of those ESPN specials, where when he got traded to the Indianapolis, he said, okay, well, I got to go buy another house. He buys a $1 million house in Indianapolis. God forbid if you, just get a $200,000 house or something to that effect. He had 10 people living with him in that house from Cleveland. And for the 6-hour drive to Indianapolis, he had to hire guys to move his house. He had to hire people to pack up all the stuff in boxes. He had to hire people to load up his cars on a flatbed truck and drive it to Indianapolis. They didn't drive his cars over there. They didn't pack his stuff for him. They didn't load the truck. No one helped him. No one lifted a finger for him. And here he is giving them their entire lifestyle. I mean, most of them weren't even working. They were just leeching off of this guy. I mean, is that what love is in your eyes? I mean, the people who say they love you the most, you know, maybe they just don't realize they're destroying you. Maybe they, out of good intentions, or really apathy is what it sounds like to me, maybe these people are slowly destroying you. But he trusted them. And one of the stories he tells is when he got let go from the Colts, he has 10 people living with him. He just comes home and he has to walk past everyone, doesn't say a word. He goes into his room. He has to go into his room and shut the door and lock it to have his own little home within his home because there's so many people there living off of him. So many people guilt tripping him. So relatives came out of the woodwork, childhood friends, got the brothers with their wife and their kids, and he's got his kids, and then there's a baby mom, and then there's his parents. He finally had time to take a breath because he wasn't on a football team and he didn't have to go to practice. All he had to do was just wake up and work out because he wanted to stay in shape for the next team. But with the free time on his hands, he finally went back and looked through his finances. 11 Netflix accounts were being paid for monthly under his name. 8 Hulu Plus accounts. I guess no one's really into Amazon Prime over there. And when you look at the couple of debit cards that he let his boy, one of them is his quote-unquote manager, his personal assistant, and another one was his brother, $1.6 million in spending just gone. And he knew most of that wasn't him. Bottle service at the club? Trent Richardson doesn't drink. So they were just spending money. They were living a better lifestyle than he was while he was out going to work, getting his block knocked off every day by some backup linebacker trying to make the starting squad in practice. They were living a more affluent and luxurious lifestyle than the guy who actually made the money. Be careful. We see this happen to our clients. People come into money. If you scratch off lottery tickets, sometimes usually someone inherits something from an old uncle. Watch out. That money will destroy you. It will destroy your family. It will destroy your relationships. And that's why you need a financial advisor. If you ever come into money, you need a financial advisor. I'm James Parker, 504-260-0995. This is Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on Newstalk 99.5 WRNO.
The contents of this show are meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not meant to take place of your attorney, accountant, tax professional, personal trainer, football coach, interior decorator, or those fortune tellers at Jackson Square. Please consult a financial advisor before making all investment decisions. Now, back to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Gregory Ricks & Associates is a registered investment advisory firm. Please consult form ADV at the bottom of every page of GregoryRicks.com for all of our legally required disclosures. If your financial advisor doesn't have a form ADV, ask for it. If he can't give it to you, then he's not a real fiduciary. He is not a registered investment advisor, nor does he work for a registered investment advisory firm. He is probably a salesman trying to sell you product. That's what that's all about. Our next Gregory Ricks live event is coming up August 16th, and not this Tuesday, but next, Ruth's Chris in Metairie, 6:30 p.m. Why should you go to a Gregory Ricks live event? Be wary of the financial advisor who is willing to take you on as a client without getting to know you. Be wary of the financial advisor who is willing to take you on as a client without you getting to know him. People often don't understand the magnitude and the intimacy and the relationship between a financial advisor and a client. It's almost up there with doctor. I mean, Gregory's not going to see you naked physically, but he will see you naked financially. He will know where you're spending your money. He will know what your kids' names are and where they live and whether or not they have a house and when their birthday is. He will know how many grandkids you have, how many houses you own. He will know how much you spent on that car and where your money is going. And not because we're nosy, not because we're going to turn around and sell that information to some mass marketing group that's going to be sending you junk mail. You have to know this stuff in order to set up the right financial plan for each and every person. It gets very intimate. We do not take these relationships lightly. This isn't like Best Buy where if you need a cord, go buy a cord. Or if you want a new TV, you can go to any of these spots, buy a new TV. They don't have to know anything about you. We do. So it's not just compatibility and getting to know you. It's really philosophical on top of that on how to pick your right advisor. Because it doesn't matter if you have a ton of fantastic assets and you love Gregory Ricks' show and you love what he does. If you're not a match, philosophically speaking, if you want to go out there and take a bunch of wild risk and you don't want to follow his advice and you're going to fight us tooth and nail every step of the way, or maybe you think you're a smart enough guy that you can do better by yourself. Find out. That's what the Gregory Ricks Lives events start off to be about. Another thing that we think is essential in an event like this is the transparency factor. You get to learn not just how we think, but how our company works. You'll get to meet a lot of people that work there. You'll get to meet one of our, probably two of our associate advisors. You'll get to meet some of our staff, our client concierge. You'll get to see what our customer service looks like. Everything will be laid out there. You'll get to meet Gregory. You'll get to meet his wife. You'll get to meet all the Total Wealth Authority. You'll get to ask us all questions. Does anyone else lay out the inner workings of their company for you like that? In such a transparent public position where you can ask questions and poke and prod. That's what this is all about. The more you know about us, the better off you are. And plus, we want you to know what we can do so you know to ask questions, so you know what questions to ask. How do you know? How'd you know to even ask the question about a living trust if we didn't introduce you to Wes Blanchard, our estate planning attorney, and he talked a little bit about it? That may spur something in your head that you need to tell us, or maybe that you didn't know because the last guy that you had managing your money wasn't aligned with an estate planning attorney. They didn't work in concert for your plan. So when you say it's time to do something about your money, you know, you got a nest egg, you've been piling up. The most common scenario we see is people have just been funding a 401k and it's gotten pretty big and it's up in the six figures and, you know, time to start thinking about retirement. I'm about 10 years out. I need to do something with this. I know just leaving it in a 401k is not the right thing to do. So when you talk about it's time to do something with your money, I think this is what you had in mind. Now, I'm not telling you to come on board. I'm telling you to come out and meet us and see if we are what you were thinking about you wanted to do with your money. It may not be. You may want to go buy a hotel and run it with your big pile of cash. And that's your idea of income in retirement and Nirvana heaven. And maybe you don't want to turn around and just invest it and have that money work for you. Maybe you want to stay on the heels of a new business venture. Or maybe you want to live out your dream. Or maybe you always wanted to do X, Y, Z. Come find out. Because really what it is, it's just education. No one's trying to sell you anything. No one's trying to put you in a product. No one's trying to get a hold of your cash. No one's going to be moving big chunks of money at the event or after the event or filling out paperwork that gives us access to anything. This is just education. Find out what we're all about. You will be guaranteed to learn something you did not know at the event. And all you're learning is your options. You'll still, at the end of the session, you will get to choose what option you choose, whatever you think is best. But this is how you learn what the options are. Because trust me, you don't know what all your options are. 6 years ago when I started this show, I didn't know what all the options are by a long shot. I wouldn't say I know what all your options are. I'm up to about 90% at this point. And another important thing about this is bring your spouse, your significant other, whatever, whoever you're sharing a financial life with, bring them to the event. Make them a part of it. They have to be a part of it. Look, your spouse may even tell you, I'm just not interested in money. Too bad. They need to be a part of this. This isn't just a money-only decision. This is a family decision. This is a lifestyle decision. And we were very specific when we named the show Winning at Life. Not winning with your money, not winning financially, not being there as rich as you could possibly be. Some people consider winning even if they have less money, if their lifestyle is accommodating it more so than their money is. That's winning. Happiness. Not promising you happiness, but we have to take a big macro view. And your spouse has to be a part of that. What happens if something happens to you? 9 out of 10 women at some point in their life will be in sole control of their financial world. Most of them were okay with it, but there were quite a few who had it thrust upon them involuntarily. They didn't want to learn about money. They didn't ever take the time to be involved in the finances. Those are the people that get crushed. We don't like to see that happen. We don't leave spouses behind. No spouse left behind. So bring them out. And the important thing is they can absorb information right next to you. Y'all can hear the same presentation and y'all come home with some takeaways that are different. One may notice something the other one didn't and vice versa. But it's super important that your spouse is there because you're not going to make any decisions that day. We want you to go home and we want you to talk about it over breakfast the next morning. We want you to sleep on it a couple times. We want you to have that discussion when you're driving and, oh man, there's a traffic jam. We're just stuck here and stop and go. And hey, remember that thing about the living trust? Or you remember that thing about getting Beneficiary designation is updated in your 401k or on your IRA or whatever these discussions. We want these interpersonal private discussions to happen on as high levels of a possible, and that's why your spouse has to be there. Now, ladies, we have another event coming up. We haven't talked about this much because it's a little far off, but it's the next Women Winning at Life event. That's going to be Wednesday, September 14th. Now, this is for women only. Something else we've noticed is that when you have men and women in the room, women behave different than when you take the men out of the room. I blame men for that because we're bombastic and we like to dominate the conversation. We like to let other people in the room know just how smart we are. Oh, yeah, stock options. I know all about that. This is one time I bought some stocks. And the guys are trying to out-one-up each other. And, you know, we've noticed not all women, but some women kind of retreat and they just keep their mouth shut. But when you take the men out of the room, there they go. And they ask questions. They ask more questions. They ask better questions. They're a little more open and relaxed. They're not as shy. They're not worried about what the men are thinking or if a man thinks that they're just some harping, bossy lady. It's profound, the difference. And so we accommodate that with our Women Winning at Life events. And if we notice a behavior pattern and we can accommodate it to better serve the women clients that we have, well, you best believe we're going to take it. So that next event is coming up Wednesday, September 14th. No dudes allowed. I'm not even invited. Now, Gregory Ricks and I believe Wes Blanchard are going to show up. They're going to be carted in just for the ability to answer your questions. And the second you're done asking them questions, they get patted on the back and told to leave. And then it's just ladies again. So that's what some of these events are about. The next one, Gregory Ricks Live, August 16th. It's coming up next Tuesday, Ruth's Chris in Metairie, 6:30 p.m. To reserve your seat, go to GregoryRicks.com. The phone number's up there, but you can also fill out a form to reserve your seat. You can do the same thing at the Gregory Ricks & Associates app, or you can do it the old-fashioned way. Call the office, 504-832-9200. Among the people that, hey, listen up, are you working at the Imperial Sugar Packing Plant in Gramercy? I saw a report that that's about to close. Whenever things like this happen in the area, for some people, it's devastating. For some people, it's an early retirement. It's a bonus. It's a gift. For some people, for most people, though, it could go either way. You make the wrong moves in this transition in your life, you could destroy your retirement accounts. Or this could be the chance for you to take that old 401k and roll over into IRA, open up your world of options, and this could be, monetarily speaking, one of the better things that happened to you. But you got to know what to do with that 401k. Or if they're offering you a pension buyout, do you take the lump sum or you take the annuitized payments? So those transfer offers, too, those are going to be the toughest decisions. Gregory Ricks Live, August 16th, Tuesday, Ruth's Chris in Metairie, 504-832-9200, or go to GregoryRicks.com. I'm James Parker. Starbucks has more cash than your bank, probably. I'll explain that coming up. Seriously, they have more cash on hand than most banks right now. This is Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. Welcome to Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. Coming up in 15 minutes, we're going to be joined by Dwayne Stein. He is the chef of Mortgage Gumbo, which comes on after Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks every Saturday. And he's the head chef over at Cross Country NOLA over on the North Shore. Your lending leader on both shores, though. And he's going to be our guest in the 11 o'clock hour. And I want to pick his big head about the two opposite stories that we're hearing from the housing market right now. Home prices are going up. Real estate market's on the move. The new home prices are going up. Existing home prices are going up. But on the other side of that coin, home ownership rates are down to levels we hadn't seen since the 60s. Ouch. So how do you explain that dichotomy of good news versus bad news? I think it's the same thing, and this you'll get my rudimentary opinion. We'll get the expertise in 15 minutes. I think it's a lot like what you're seeing in the job market. For the people who have jobs and have stayed employed through the Great Recession, doing just fine. Doing just fine. But God forbid if you lose your job or if you have it interrupted. That's what's so scary about this oil patch back and forth we have going on. Losing that job. Not only will it probably result in you getting a lower paying job, but it may result in you not getting a new job at all. It's super tough out there. So if you manage to remain employed over the last 8 years, which, hey, I actually did. So, ha, if I can do it. No, I'm just, if everyone was as lucky as me, we wouldn't have to have these problems. So I'm going to ask him about that in about 15 minutes. So did you know Starbucks probably has more money on hand than your bank? This is sort of an accident, but this is all born out of the raging popularity of a Starbucks card. Do you have a Starbucks? Angie, I'm going to try and lean on you here. I don't go to Starbucks. I've been before. I just, I drink coffee every day, but not at $4 a clip.
I'm not a big fan of Starbucks, so yeah, no, sorry.
See, now the hot redhead, my wife, is a big fan of the foo-foo coffees, but she spreads it around a lot. She does a little Pacino, she does PJ, she goes to Chateau Cafe, sometimes Nola Bean, sometimes Starbucks.
I was just going to say, and it's not because of any other reason. I mean, I like the local coffee shops like your wife. Like, I prefer those better.
Well, she's not against a good Starbucks, and the only time I'm really excited about going to a foo-foo coffee shop is that little 2-3 months in the fall when white people remember what pumpkin spice is, and then it disappears for the other 9 months a year. And I'm looking at the white people going, hey, what happened to pumpkin spice? And they're like, what are you talking about? What is this pumpkin spice? I'm like, is everyone playing a joke on me? Because that was the greatest thing in the world in November. Now it's January. No one's heard of it. And it's like y'all are freaking me out. It's like everyone's playing a game on me. This is why I have to hang out with other demographics, because my black friends and my Hispanic friends don't do this to me. They don't pumpkin spice in my face all day, every day for 2 months, and then what? I don't, what is this pumpkin spice you speak of? What is this new exotic spice you're bringing to my attention? So I feel like you're playing a joke on me. So that's that is the context in which I approach the Starbucks story, because now 41% of Starbucks customers in the United States and Canada now pay for their beverages and snacks from a Starbucks card. They've got their own credit system. They have their own financial underworld in the Starbucks empire. Man, if ever you can talk someone into paying $6 for some coffee, a little bit of flavoring and some ground up ice, you're on your way to world domination. Kudos to Starbucks for pulling that off. I mean, is that just not the financial genius of the year? What do you have, 15 cents a product in there in that cup? Selling it for $6. Genius. Angie,
and
what?
I just know people who are absolutely addicted to Starbucks. So they definitely have something going. I mean, they can't go a day without their grande latte, whatever.
I tell you what's even funnier is as non-barista compliant as I seem to be, there was a little span when I first started working in radio. You know how you have to have side jobs. One of them was at a cafe, and I can make all those drinks. I'm an incredible barista. I can foam milk with the best of them. I can foam soy milk, and that's a tough one because it doesn't have the fat in it, the globules that foam up really well. So I'm familiar with it. I know the difference between everything espresso and cappuccino, and what a double cappuccino is, what a latte is, what a cafe au lait is, all that, and I can make it for you in front of your face with beautiful precision. But 12 million loyalty customers in the United States alone has Starbucks boasting more customer money on its cards than many banks have in deposits. So this is why I don't understand what's the appeal of the debit system with the Starbucks card. Why would you put money on that but not in your regular debit account?
And I almost can't believe that's the case in the day and age where you can buy Keurigs or, like you say, even your home, coffee system and make your own cappuccinos, that people are still buying $6-7 a cup, once
or
twice a day.
You're not crazy to think that, but you're answering your own question here. The appeal of Starbucks isn't the coffee, isn't the quality of the coffee, isn't the flavor. It's you're paying for the convenience is what you're paying for. You're paying for someone who actually knows how to foam milk. Can you foam milk in your house?
Even buy that cappuccino machine that does it instantly. That's a couple $100.
It ain't the same. I can beat a cappuccino machine, and I can foam milk better than even if I gave you a cappuccino machine. It's an art. It takes a lot of practice to do that. It took me about 3 months before I was comfortable foaming everything all day, every day, because I would still screw it up and have to start over. For about 3 months, I would screw stuff up and have to start over all the time. After that, man, I am an artiste. But guess how much is loaded on these little prepaid Starbucks cards right now? This is how much cash on hand Starbucks is just sitting on. Their mattress is full of these $1 bills. $1.2 billion right now has already been spent on Starbucks that hasn't even been made yet. That's the amazing part is because of the way the logistics of the Starbucks card, it's the exact same as prepaying for your coffee months in advance. So Starbucks already gets that money. They give you the coffee later. And that's if you're going to redeem it all. You know, some of these Starbucks cards get lost, or when it gets down to like $3, you just throw it away. You know, what am I going to get? Half a cup of coffee. So Starbucks is killing it with the Starbucks card, finding new ways to get revenue in. I mean, they're getting revenue in before they even have to get out the coffee. That's like the opposite of the dude from Popeyes. I'll gladly pay you tomorrow for a cheeseburger today, or Tuesday for a cheeseburger on Monday. The customer's bank deposits, that's a bank chain, $780 million. The Green Dot Corporation, $560 million. There's some other chains out there who have far less. Look, that's half of what Starbucks has, $560 million. Now, I don't know this bank. This must be a regional bank in some other region besides us. But if they only have $560 million cash on hand, Starbucks is doubling them up. Goodness. The PayPal, what runs a similar thing, where you stock up money in your PayPal account, has a ton more than that. It has about a factor of $10, $13 billion on its customer accounts around the world. This is incredible. You have people prepaying for stuff months down the road. And the fun thing about PayPal is it could be for anything. I don't even know what I'm prepaying for. I just know I'm going to be spending stuff out of my PayPal account. So let's go ahead and get some money shoved in there. Or people that receive payments via PayPal, it's just going to sit in their account until they can try and convert it out. Just thought that was an incredible business anomaly that your coffee shop has more cash on hand in reserves, dollar for dollar, than most bank chains. That is incredible. Hey, something I talked about a little bit on yesterday, that is, I think this is tonight. Is that the first big drone championships are going to be held on ESPN? And I am really, I don't want to say I'm excited about this. I'm interested to see if other people find this as fascinating as I do, because I'm wrong on these things all the time. But the videos they keep putting up of these drone races is mind-blowing stuff. It looks like it's not real. If you have not been exposed to it, I can explain it to you. You know drones, those little quadcopter drones that fly around. What they've done is they will go into one of these abandoned warehouses or a stadium or a convention center, some gigantic building with wide open space, and they'll make a course in there, like these hoops and these lit paths that these drones race through. And so it's kind of like a NASCAR race, but it's drones and it's tiny. And that doesn't sound like it would be too cool if you're in the room watching it happen. But the way you watch it via TV is mind-blowing. They have cameras on all the drones, front and back. And it's the same appeal that, you know, I've always had respect for auto racing when I was a kid, you know, growing up in the sticks. You would go to some dirt track out in the middle of nowhere and watch these hicks race each other. Incredibly entertaining. On TV, though, with the less crashes and, you know, the cars that are all alike, you know, it was less appealing. But recently, NASCAR, I can sit out and watch a NASCAR race these days because of all the cool new camera angles they put on everything. And you can hear the drivers talking to the pit crew, and there's the side view, and then there's a shot of the driver himself, and then there's the back camera, and then there's the camera on the front of the hood. And if there's a wreck, you can go back and review them. That's what this drone racing has on its side. They have cameras all over these drones. So you feel like when you're watching it, go check out some of these videos on YouTube. You feel like you're in the drone flying around. They dim the lights, and they have the little obstacles and things that they're supposed to go through that are lit up real fancy. You feel like you're in an episode of Star Wars. You feel like, what was that last one? Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, I believe it was. You know, at the beginning when they're in that big combat in space, you know, sort of the dogfight, and they're flying in and out, and there's a big ship, and there's a little ship, and there's a drone, and there's a hoop, and that thing's on fire, and that thing's exploding, dodge a missile. It's just so fast and action-packed.
Well, that's exactly what I'm thinking of. Exactly. When you said drone races, I'm thinking of was episode 3 or 4.
You're thinking of pod races, and that was in episode 1, and we would all like to forget the pod races because those were ridiculous. That's not what we're talking about. But the way it is just made for TV, I think, is absolutely fascinating because the visuals are going to be stunning. I'm interested to see if this takes off. You know, I was right about Pokemon Go. I've been wrong about a lot of other things. So let's let's forget the mistakes and we'll stick on the positives. I am interested to see, because this could be a whole new industry. Because drone this, drone that, drone deliveries. They unveiled a drone at CES this year that could pick up a human being. So how about instead of getting an Uber Lyft home, you can take a drone home. I don't know. This all the possibilities are endless. Coming up next, Dwayne Stein, host of Mortgage Gumbo, is going to be in studio to talk about your housing market. 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. You're listening to Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on Newstalk 99.5 WRNO. I am your host, James Parker. Gregory Ricks is out on assignment. That's what we like to say when he's out. He's out on assignment. Sounds serious. Joining me for this hour of the show, Dwayne Stein, the chef of Mortgage Gumbo and the big wig over at Cross Country Mortgage. And he is your mortgage authorité. Did I say that right? Is it authorité or authorité?
Authorité.
Yeah, I thought it was authorité.
We'll go authorité.
No, authorité is Cartman, right?
Yeah.
Okay, my bad. Easy mistake to make, though.
Yeah, I mean, if you're that smart, which you are, so.
All right, we're gonna focus on real estate coming up in this hour, mortgage lending, renting, buying, all that good stuff. But in the final hour of the show, we still got a couple of topics I got to run by you, including some more market analysis, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the iHeartRadio Music Festival. And seniors are getting locked out of their Social Security accounts online starting this week if you don't receive texts. Did you see this story?
Yes.
What a horrible idea that was.
It's just more way that they can get your data, control you.
Well, no. Look, it's with the best intentions that they did this. They just didn't think it through, I think. I don't think it's a disaster. It's just an inconvenience. Anyway, that's coming up in the noon hour. If you have any questions, financial-related, mortgage-related, real estate-related, we have a little bit of expertise across the table here with Dwayne. 504-260-0995. 504-260-0995. Now, Dwayne, I got to start off with the split in information I'm getting when it comes to mortgages and housing and the real estate markets, because I'm hearing two sides of the coin. I saw a great report on Thursday about how new home sales are up. The price on the new home sales is up. Price on existing homes when they sell is up. So the real estate market, boy, sounds hot. Sounds popping. We're doing good. All right. Yeah. We're getting some homes sold and home values are going up. There must be a bunch of people flooding the market.
Yeah.
And then, but Tuesday I'd read a report that we are at 50-year home ownership lows.
Correct. It is absolutely the most confusing data right now out there because, you know, you could look at, I think it's been since 1951 that the percentage that we're at home ownership since we've been this low.
Is it 51 or 61?
It might have been 61.
Yeah, I'm thinking
it 61. But it's very, it's concerning. But go back to what you just stated. Appreciation, you know, when you look at affordability and everything like that in the housing market right now is as high as it's been in forever, at least in the last 10 years.
Forever?
You know, at least last 10 years. So,
can you, a little expertise, please?
Yeah, right, right. It's well, hey.
Better than the history of ever.
Right, right. So when you look at that, you touched on it last segment, James. People who are already in a house right now, they're benefiting greatly. We're doing as many refinances as we have ever done at Cross Country Mortgage right now because appreciation in home values has skyrocketed. So people that are in a house are able to take advantage of opportunities to refinance their home. Okay? Now, you turn that on the other side and you go, well, heck, why is home ownership so low? Well, where's unemployment at, regardless of what that number says? Okay? Where's that at? We just don't have the people that can afford housing right now. That's where the frustration is. Now, again, when I say this, and we talk about this all the time on my show, what we care about right here is our little area. And we're not seeing it in our little area as much as in our little New Orleans, our little, you know, matrix, our little market right here, as much as it's being seen around the rest of the country. But I could tell you it's having effects, because now you're looking at some of these housing markets, and I could see it with the contracts that I get, James. We had just 60 days ago, we would have a house come on the market, and I would have agents calling me 10:30, 11 o'clock at night having to make an offer because there was multiple offers on a house. Now, even in our market, maybe there's one offer on that house, or that house that went away in 48 hours. If you go look now, you're starting to see price reduced, because the market is sort of, in my opinion, maybe leveled out. I think we've capped out on affordability. So you still got that seller who thinks, hey, I'm going to get max dollar for my house, but that buyer going, nope, not going to pay you for that.
I'm going to get a good deal on
right,
my house.
Exactly.
All right, I just did a quick search here in Google News. Found out where that 51 number comes from. We're at a 51-year low. It hasn't been since 1951 that home ownership rates have been slow. It was 51 years ago.
Yeah.
That it was this low. All right. So we were both kind of right. You're right to say that 51, though.
So that's where you've got to keep in mind, when we're watching all this, what is truly, really going on. And you touched on a lot of it. Hey, jobs report to something. I mean, you saw 60 days ago, we talked about it, the May report. Hey, it was 38. Then it was
11.
Now it's 24.
Woo.
So, you know, all of a sudden, these last 2 months, we've had improvements in jobs. Awesome. That's great. We want that. Hey, I know we're hiring. I know we're doing more loans than we ever have right now at Cross Country. Okay? But with that said, the fact is this affordability, the things that are going on right now, there is a little bit of the economy is having a huge effect, because that's upsetting to hear that right now we're at, like we said, 51 year lows or whatever.
51 year lows. Yeah. Hadn't been this bad since 65.
That's frustrating. It's frustrating. And that's something that I have to explain to people all the time, because we get a lot of young people who are looking and trying, and everybody goes, well, the millennials is where it's at. The millennials is where it's at. I sort of disagree, because the millennials really right now, unfortunately, are not in a place where home ownership is really even something that can be discussed because of the affordability factor.
Well, you know, one thing, one bone of contention I have with what you said the last 2 months we've added jobs. If you add 24,000 jobs in a month, you've net lost jobs, because in that month we had around 400,000 new people enter the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And so if only 24,000 of them kept jobs, that's a drag on unemployment. That means we have more unemployed people
sure. That
month than we had previously. Other than that, though, I think you're spot on. And there's a couple of things that have the millennials sort of lagging in their home ownership. Number one is, you know, if you and I think this may be unfairly pulling the home ownership number down, too. You've been living with your mom and dad for the last 5 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
That counts as one household, and it's owned. It's not being rented, and you've got all the people in it. But if the economy gets a little bit better, not gangbusters, but we are doing a little better than we were 5 years ago.
Sure.
Maybe we're doing just good enough that Junior, you know, now he's 26 or 27, he can move out the house, but now he's renting. So what we have is the exact same number of people. We actually have a better financial situation because Junior got a job, but we have two households created. One's paid for, one's rent, or one's owned, one's rented.
Right.
So that kind of pulls the number down, even though, you know, in the well-being and the lifestyle of the family we speak of, they're doing better now than they did 5 years ago.
Yeah, and again, you're spot on, James, but keep this in mind. Our New Orleans market, 90% of our area, outside of Metairie and Jefferson, and when I say Jefferson Parish, I mean basically Metairie, pretty much every other area around here is rural development, which means 100% financing. So, again,
even if it's not rural, what is the most urban rural development area that you're aware of right now? Because these are just great. I love
Gretna, the West Bank. I mean, I wouldn't consider that rural at all. You know, so right. When you're looking at that, I mean, you know, God's Country down in St. Bernard, You know,
and now you're being redundant.
Right. So now once you cross over the bridge and all that, it's a whole different ballgame. But so what I want you to understand is in our market right here, we have outlets for some of the millennials because a lot of the millennials aren't making a combined income right out of school or their first couple years in of $75,000, which is the income requirement. So we, again, are not necessarily seeing it in this market, but from a national standpoint, it's just it's all coming down to affordability. Affordability has built itself up to where we're in a situation now where – where do we go from here?
Well, another thing that I think is artificially pulling those numbers down, and they should be higher, or it's not really indicative of the struggles people are going through. It's just the different world that millennials and really people my age, your age too.
Sure.
We're a little more fragmented out. This is more of a gig economy, and there's several factors that come into this. But, you know, we use the old example when you went out of high school or came out of college in the 40s or 50s, you got a job and you worked there for 40 years, right?
Correct.
Well, we definitely don't do that these days.
No.
But it's becoming even more decentralized and fragmented than that because of a couple of factors. Number one is the insane amount of benefits and regulations that come with hiring someone full-time is pushing people artificially into either being a 1099 contract employee or a part-timer, even though they're really not a part-timer. They're
correct.
Just on paper a part-timer.
Right.
So that forces millennials to take more fragmented jobs, and they need that flexibility to be able to hop and move from job to job, but also sort of the Uberization of the economy, where mm-hmm. if technology allows you, if you're a professional of some sort, like if you're a graphic designer, you don't have to go get with like a public relations firm or a TV station or a magazine to, you know, do your graphic arts. You can be a freelance guy and just accept gig. But that fragmented work environment means you probably need to be more flexible and you're probably more likely to be a renter.
Yeah. Well, listen, the days of, hey, I'm going to hang out here because at 25 years I get a gold watch. You know, working somewhere.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
It's over.
Do they even do that anymore? Does anyone get gold watches when they retire?
I mean, probably if you stay there for 25 years, but you just talked about it.
I don't know one person.
No, that's what I'm saying. But even more, as you stated, I see more business for self clients now than ever before because everybody is a tree cutter, a freelancer, a photographer. They're figuring out something to do. Hey, they landscaped their yard. The neighbor told them it looked good. Now they're landscape artists.
Right.
You know, so everybody's trying to figure it out because everybody's trying to make that dollar because we don't know what the future holds.
All right. If you have some real estate or lending questions, 504-260-0995, you can call Dwayne Stein. He's across the table from me here for the next 45 minutes. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. Welcome to Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. I am your host, James Parker, joined by Dwayne Stein. Dwayne, you know why we're playing Billy Idol right now?
No clue.
Come on, man, just guess.
Because the Guns N' Roses concert last Sunday was probably one of the greatest concerts I've ever been to.
Was Billy Idol there?
No, but I just figured I'd throw that out because it was just a great concert.
All right, Captain Random. No, Billy Idol is one of the featured artists at our iHeartRadio Music Festival, the 2016 iHeartRadio Music Festival, September 23rd and 24th. He's going to be playing on the 23rd, the Friday show.
He's got new songs out or something? Or
I think he has bills to pay.
Yeah.
Yeah, who was telling us he had some health issues that he had to... was that Gregory?
Yeah,
that was on that one
last week. Y'all talked about that.
Or was that? I think that might have been Dwell Nola.
Well, he canceled a concert here in New Orleans about a year ago because of health issues. He ended up rescheduling, but yeah, he's had some problems.
Billy Idol seems like such a punk. Like I'm so mean, I'm gonna kick some butt. When you see an interview with him, you're like, that guy's hilarious. I want to hang out with him.
Right.
But he'll be there for the Friday version. U2, Drake, Sia, 21 Pilots, Sam Hunt, Billy Idol and One Republic are the Friday lineup. For Saturday, Cage the Elephant, Tears for Fears, Zedd, Florida Georgia Line, Ariana Grande, Pitbull, Britney Spears, Usher, and Sting.
I mean, Tears for Fears. I mean, I could see them in House of Blues. I mean, I think iHeartRadio, they got to step up here. I need more. I mean, Tears for Fears, man. Come on.
That's the opening act. If Tears for Fears is the opening act on
Sting?
A...
Sting? I mean, these are people that probably would have trouble filling House of Blues.
Sting would fill the arena. You're being ridiculous.
I'm sorry, not Sting. All right, you got me there.
Tears
Usher,
for Fears?
What have you done for me lately?
He just packed the arena like last year.
Ah, whatever.
Usher's huge.
Tears for Fears.
You didn't see that Usher viral video with the Showbiz Pizza Place band doing... The Usher song?
No. I mean, I'm... Listen.
Usher's huge. You have no idea.
They got to do a better job. Is Britney Spears in there?
Britney Spears is on the Saturday lineup. I don't know if you've seen her lately.
Yes.
Hi.
I've seen her.
She went through that funk phase where she kind of looked like you for a while when she shaved her head.
Yeah.
That was not a good look. She's back to being just totally... And what is she, like 2 kids deep into this and 36 years old? Hi. Yeah.
She's prime. She's perfect right now.
Ridiculously.
I needed to come back to Kentwood, so...
Like, she may be hotter now than she was at 19.
Oh, easily. Of course.
And that was amazing, because I was 22 years old when she was 19, and that was the tippy top of the...
Yeah.
I love
Timberlake?
Her.
Justin Timberlake?
Justin Timberlake what?
Is he in this deal?
No. What, are you just asking for random people now?
I mean, I'm just... Who would I want to see?
You would want to see you too, wouldn't you? You Billy Idol? I guarantee you there's 5 1 Republic songs that you like, even though you can't name one of them.
I seen you two when they opened the dome.
Wasn't that awesome?
Yeah.
Yeah. You wouldn't want to see Sting?
Yeah. With the police?
I know who you would want to see. Pitbull.
Yes.
Yes.
Holla at your boy.
I bet you're a Britney Spears fan, too.
Yeah.
Florida Georgia Line, would you like to see them?
No, because they don't like cops.
Yes, they
I'm
do.
I'm boycotting them.
Oh, okay.
I'm boycotting them. I'm against them now. I'm not dealing with it.
I don't buy
they
that story.
They sold out.
I don't buy that story.
They sold out, dude.
I don't think... That story can't be true. That someone's just pulling that out of context. Because they probably have their little thing going on where it's like, look, no one's allowed to come back here. And some guy's like, well, I'm a cop. Can I come back here? No one can come back here. And they're like, hey, they won't let cops back here. I'm pretty sure that's how it happened.
You got to pick a side. I'm always siding with the blue, Parker.
Well, me too. And I think Florida Georgia Line's on the blue side, too. Cage the Elephant, you wouldn't want to see them?
No. They got one-hit wonder. Next.
They've got 5 songs that I love.
Because you're a music guy, but for most people who are going to this iHeartRadio deal, these are people winning stuff from all over the country. They're going there. Get a bunch of... I mean, if that's fine, let Tears for Fears get in, hit their song, get out. Cage the Elephant, that's not impressive. The 21 whoevers.
Cake, 21 they, Pilots is
they
awesome,
cake
too.
Or is that the cake people? Cake in the ocean?
Yeah, they eat cake in the ocean.
Right. I mean,
never
then
mind.
What? Then after they sing that, what happens?
Let's go to your expertise then.
Yeah.
Something you're talking about coming up on Mortgage Gumbo today, you had mentioned HELOC. What's behind that story?
Listen, this is the proverbial elephant in the room.
Okay? Cage the Elephant in the room?
Yes, yeah. Because... This is very, very concerning to me.
So does it cause tears and maybe fears?
It does. Okay. It causes a lot of fear. 3.2 million households with $265 billion dollars in debt on HELOCs is coming due within the next 24 months.
That sounds pretty grande. Like
okay.
maybe Ariana Grande.
That is absolutely petrifying, Parker. And I'm going to tell you why. Because where we're standing right now, when all this stuff comes due, it's a whole different element than where we were back in 2009.
Right.
Okay? I could tell you, this week alone, I had 3 different clients. We talked about this last week on a show, James, on Mortgage Gumbo with Dwayne Stein, 1 or 2 every Saturday. We talked about the HELOCs. I had 3 different clients this week.
Wait, does everyone know what a HELOC is? Home equity line of credit?
Home equity, yeah. So a home equity line of credit that basically... What it is, during the housing bubble, a lot of people took advantage of this.
Sure.
Okay? They took out these lines of credit. Well, these banks lent up to 90, 95, some of them 100% value of your home, or what they assessed as value.
I thought that was illegal. Isn't there some sort of, like, restriction? Like, you're not supposed to usher in more than 90%?
Well, just
the usher.
Yeah. So here is what's happened here, okay? You've got folks who have $100,000, $150,000 house. They've got $100,000 mortgage. They go to the bank. They get a line of credit for $50,000. Sounds great. Open checkbook, okay? use it. It's on a 10-year fixed term. Okay? Interest only is all you pay. At the end of that term, guess what? Now it's got whatever the rate is, plus prime, or, you know, however it looks. That's why we talked about last week. If you have a HELOC, you've got to dust off the stuff. Go find your old little cabinet that you keep all your mortgage stuff in, and you need to read it to see exactly what's going on. Okay? Because when these things are going due, payments are tripling and quadrupling on what you're paying, because all you're doing is interest only right now.
Oh, that's got to sting.
So you're going to have two options. You could either pick
sting.
Yeah. So you got two options. You could either pay it in full with a balloon payment, which how many people can do that? Okay. Or you're going to have to refinance at whatever the rate and term is based on your HELOC. Okay. Now, it's a second mortgage. So what's going to happen, for instance, the three that I looked at this week, okay, these people have perfect credit. Everything is absolutely fantastic on where they stand. But they're still roughly about $25,000, $30,000 short in the equity of their home for us to be able to do a refinance. Because the most cash out refinance you can do on a conventional loan is 80%.
What if they can come up with a pile of cash to make up for that? I mean, I know that's not likely, but
no. Then that one of the options that I gave to one of the people is one of the clients is, hey, if you've got $25,000, we can do this for you.
Okay.
Okay. Unfortunately, listen, when people get these home equity lines of credit, they're using it for whatever reasons they wanted to. They were given a line of credit, whether it's tuition, whether it's fix up around the house, whatever you wanted to do. But now that these things are all of a sudden coming due, that's a lot of homes. So in my little sampling, one out of three is 33% there. You look at whatever that number is on $265 billion, how much is that? Parker, you're smarter than me as far as numbers.
264, so one-third of that? It's about $9 billion.
So $9 billion. So 3.2 households, that's 1 million households with $9 billion in debt are people that are not going to be able to, or only going to be able to refinance. That means the other part of that, over 2 million households and the rest of the,
18 billion,
$18 billion. What's going to happen? They all of a sudden this notice coming due. So what decisions are they going to have to make?
To hand over the keys, get foreclosed, sell it in a fire sale? Can you even sell it with?
No, I mean, no. You could do a short sale, but then again, where are we heading back to?
We're heading back to
banks don't want these homes. Okay, but we're finding out now if the value's not there, even with all the affordability, they gave them the money based on 100%, 90%, whatever it is. But when you can only do a refinance for 80% on these loan types, it's a conventional loan. HELOCs are done on a conventional loan only.
How does that change the rules?
Okay, so what that means is I can only do 80%. Okay, so it's not an FHA. They have streamlines, different things like that. But 80% when you do cash out, okay? So if you've got a first and a second, you go, wow, I didn't get cash out. Now, here's a little bit of a caveat on that. Let's say you bought your house on August 1st, and that same day the bank gave you a line of credit on that same day, then that's not considered cash out. So we could help you a little bit more there. All right, but if it was taken out on two separate days, if you bought the house on August 1st,
so you're saying if you get cash out when you buy it, it could be just rolled into the bigger loan?
It could be considered one loan, not cash out, so okay. We have a couple more options for you. That's why I'm encouraging everyone to dust off that paper and go look at it now. I've got somebody that came to me this week that they're 90 days away from having all of a sudden this payment's going. The one I looked at was from $120 up to $413. That's a lot. That's another car.
I don't have that in my budget.
Nobody does. I mean, not that they don't, but that's huge. That's a huge amount that all of a sudden somebody's going to have to start coming up with. So HELOCs right now, for me, I'm looking at over the next 2 years, is a little bit of a concern, because guess what? It's time to pay or play, and this is where we're at right now.
How much of a role did they play in the real estate meltdown in 2008?
Huge. Doing 100 and 125% loans and stuff like that. HELOCs was one of the biggest factors that put us into this situation.
Are they rolled into the mortgage-backed securities that get compiled and sold off, or are they segregated out as their own nasty?
No, it's all sold out
so
there.
So there's some stink bombs.
Oh, absolutely. It's all hidden up there. Hey, throw this in with this and that. Absolutely.
Man, we should do like a whole show one day of you talking about the backside of your business. I am fascinated by the mortgage-backed securities and where you pass off the the paper after you're done with it. That's someone's making a lot of money when it goes right over there. Whoever's behind you.
Sure.
Incredible stuff. All right. Well, that's Dwayne Stein. He's the chef of Mortgage Gumbo. We're going to continue with the mortgage-related discussion, including HELOCs and home ownership rates and renting versus buying, all that good stuff. 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on Newstalk 99.5 WRNO.
Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks is copyrighted by Gregory Ricks for the private use of our audience. Any unauthorized use of this broadcast without express consent by Gregory Ricks is prohibited.
Continuing our discussion there off the air, Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks is a Gregory Ricks and Associates is a registered investment advisory firm. Please consult Form ADV. I'll say it if I want to. I can do extra disclaimers. Dwayne Stein's in studio with us. I'm James Parker, your co-host. Gregory Rick's still out on assignment. He should be back doing the regular gig on Monday. I want to remind you about the weekday version of our show. Gregory Rick's and I do the Daily Wrap, the Winning at Life, the Daily Wrap, Monday through Friday, 7 to 8. And that's when we look more at the news of what happened today. We watch your money while you're out at work doing important things, taking care of your family, taking care of the house, taking care of that jerk of a boss you have. we're watching your money on the back end, and we give you a daily update. And don't forget about the podcast for both versions of the show. We knock out the pod. Well, that's Angie's job there. Producer Angie knocks out the podcast. Don't let her work go to waste. A lot of education to be had on those podcasts. Our next Gregory Ricks Live event, August 16th. That's not this coming Tuesday, but next Tuesday. Ruth's Chris in Metro, 6:30 p.m., this month's charity, you'll like this one. Dwayne will be there. He's at most of them.
Yep.
Team Gleason.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
Their movie came out yesterday. They started showing it, right?
Studios. They had the official debut was in Austin, because I think he's from there. And I know Drew Brees is from Austin. He went to Westlake High School in Austin. And I think he was the one that put it together. So Drew Brees actually hosted it. I follow the guy on Facebook and Twitter. So I saw Drew Brees posting about it last night.
That's so awesome. That really is. So that's good. And you know, one thing I could say, I can't say it enough about these events, is it's personalized service. You said it earlier. We're not sitting here trying to twist your arm. We're just providing options for you to let you know what your options are at these events. I mean, right now I'm working with several clients, excuse me, who are working with a couple different people with the Total Wealth Authority, which is just fantastic. I mean, you know, whether it's we're doing some reverse mortgages right now, we've got somebody else that we're doing a straight refinance for right now because it's part of Greg's plan. They're getting rid of some debts and doing some different things that we're doing for them that are also working with Jude, Tracy and Stephanie, and also with Wes. So it's just so cool, and to be able to be part of that and have all the questions answered and be in one place. I'll learn what a cough button is. So just to be in one place to have all that knowledge is really just it's just exciting, and it's a win-win for everybody. And, you know, we always talk about we ask the questionnaires, how many people are homeowners, how many people in a retirement home. It's always a vast difference, a huge difference. But just to see people when Gregory Ricks speaks and to know that they're sitting in front of this guy who's one of the top financial advisors in the entire country, to know that they're breaking bread with him and getting one-on-one with him is just fantastic.
Well, yeah, and maybe we should reiterate it more. You guys, you know where Gregory's been all week? You know why he's not here today? He's at a financial advisor conference, not in the audience taking notes of some expertise from other guys. He's the guy that they paid to go teach the other financial advisors about what he's doing right. When we first started the show about 6 years ago, he talked about the Total Wealth Authority before it existed. One of the reasons when he went independent, he's like, I got to do my own thing. It's insane that we don't have a go-to estate planning attorney. As much as we do estate planning and taxes, we've got to have the CPA guys. And then, you know, with the mortgage guys, I've been burned by a couple of mortgage guys here. I just need to nail down one guy who does a great job, who can not bend the rules, but let's say go above and beyond is probably a better description. Yep. You know, not be bound by some sort of corporate policy. Like, I don't know if we can help you on this, Mr. Smith.
Right. No.
No, that's no. You're not that guy.
Absolutely. No, we're going to turn everything over. And you know, we have a client this week, James, that called in, and they, radio show listener, wanted to take advantage of what we have is called a second look, okay? And, you know, one of the things that we want to make sure that we're looking at is, hey, if before you sign with somebody, call me, let me look over it. Well, this client was expecting to do a HARP loan, which is just a straight refinance of a conventional loan. Well, by me asking questions instead of going, oh, yeah, your rate, we can beat that rate, found out that they are VA, which means now we can do 100% refinance. So not only were we able to, instead of them just doing a HARP, by giving us a call and finding out what some different things and doing like you do.
He was in the wrong loan type period.
He was in the wrong loan type period. We're able to save these people. We cut their term on their mortgage and saved them over $600 a month and removed all their debt. So that's the difference. We're not order takers. We're going to turn over the rock. We're going to find out exactly what's the best program for you, not for me.
See why we like this guy? All right, next Gregory Ricks Live, August 16th. If you want to reserve your seat, you're going to have to reserve your seat. 504-832-9200 or go to GregoryRicks.com or the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. Both of those let you reserve your seat. To the phones we go. John in New Orleans, you're next up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks, talking to Dwayne and James. How can we help you, sir?
Hi, good morning. I just had a quick question for you guys. I'm looking to purchase my first home through a VA loan,
yep.
And I'm pre-approved right now for 330. But I've been watching the market in New Orleans, and I was curious if you guys could explain, is there any value in looking at price per square footage?
The price per square footage is going to depend. The house that you're looking at on the certain street that you like that's going for $148 a square foot, you could go across the street or around the block, and there may be that same house going for $120, John. So really, that's just going to depend on where you want to be. Location, location, location is what determines the price per square foot. You know, whether how much value you're going to get as far as that goes. You know, so you know, if you're pre-approved for the $330,000, you've just got to make a decision on, hey, how much house do I want? Because I can tell you, for $330,000, you should be getting a whole heck of a lot of house. Now, if you're looking to buy in a French Quarter, it's probably going to be a one-bedroom studio somewhere. You know, so,
right.
So the square footage is important, and that is obviously how realtors determine the value, because you got to keep in mind, a home is only worth what John's willing to pay for it. Regardless of how many appraisals we put out there and do all those things, it's only worth what you're willing to pay. But price per square foot is how you're obviously going to get a good idea of, am I getting ripped off or not? You're not going to go pay $140 a square foot in an area where it's going for $121.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's my thing is, you know, I'm seeing these homes being listed starting price.
Yes.
At $260 a square foot.
Yeah.
And I think is... Wow.
Yeah. And what's happening right now, and it's kind of what I mentioned when I first came on the show. You've got sellers right now. We're kind of in a weird spot, John, because it's starting to turn a little bit, in my opinion, back towards the buyers, because affordability is so high now that the people that can buy a house, it's limited. Right. Home ownership is at 51-year lows. So it's limited. So people like you, John, who can walk in with a pre-approval, have a little bit more skin in the game. So those sellers are going to have to realize at $260 a square foot, you still got a lot of people out there. Do they really want to sell or not? Let me ask you this. Is it listed by a realtor or for sale by owner?
This is what I'm seeing on Realtor.com.
Okay, so yeah, so a lot of those numbers may be just thrown out there because you'll probably see if you continue to look around on those sites like Realtor and Trulia and all that, you're going to see a lot of price reduced. So then as a buyer, you're going, well, hey, what the heck? Is it the market? Is it the subdivision? So all of a sudden, you start wondering what the heck's going on.
Are you not bound by location first? You're looking at price per square foot first, John?
I'm personally bound by location. I've lived in New Orleans now for 5 years.
Well, we got to narrow it down a little more than that, because when me and the hot redhead were house hunting, we only had one neighborhood I was allowed to look in, Lakeview, because she has mama there, brother-in-law there, two uncles there, and grandparents live in Mid-City. So
yeah. Right, yeah, Mid-City is where I'm looking specifically.
Yeah.
Wow, 260 even sounds a little pricey for Mid-City.
It is.
Well, I mean, well, Mid-City is a tale of two neighborhoods, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's you've got houses that are renovating and are great quality, and then you have not so great quality homes being listed at the same price, you know. So
here's what I can tell you that I want you to feel good about. The VA loan, John, first off, thanks for your service, my man. But secondly, is that's the best program out there. You know, so this VA loan, you shouldn't have to be worrying about coming out of pocket with anything. Assuming you're working with a realtor, hopefully they're negotiating with my VA clients, never, ever come out of pocket with anything. No closing costs or anything like that. So you got to keep in mind your approval for 330. What is that necessarily going to mean? So make sure hopefully your lenders explained all that to you and gave you more than just here's your number on a piece of paper. Hopefully they've explained the benefits to you on top of that. That's the key there. Not just going, yeah, you can walk around with 330 and beat your chest and go, look at me, my friend only qualifies for 285. So there's a lot of advantages. So just make sure, hopefully, you're working with a lender that took the time to explain those advantages to you.
Yeah, if you need a lender or a real estate agent, we got you covered over here, John. Our real estate guy is this Dwayne fella across the table, and the ladies that we trust with real estate hunting is dwellnola.com.
Yeah, and I would listen, John, you can call my office, 504-207-7600. I would love to we also offer free second look, so that way we can guarantee you that you're getting the cheapest rate out there and making sure that they did maximize out the value that you have available. Again, what you can afford and what you're willing to pay, listeners and John, we know that's different. Well, if I could pre-approve you on $1 million, doesn't mean you're going to buy $1 million house on St. Charles.
Oh God, no.
Because absolutely.
Right? Because, yes. You know, and we talk about this, you know, I don't want my neighbor eating steak while I'm eating ramen noodles. Right? So you want to make sure just that quality of life stays there, but at the same time, let's make sure that we can max you out, because hey, if 350 is a number and your affordability's still there, let's make sure we can get you to max dollars as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yes. Thanks, John.
Great call,
John. All right,
John.
Thank you.
Right. If you want to be next, the phone lines are open, 504-260-0995. You can do just what John in New Orleans did. Call in and have a nice little discussion with myself and Dwayne Stein from Mortgage Gumbo. Your show's about to come on in an hour and 15 minutes. You getting excited over there?
Fired up. Yeah, fired up, man.
I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. You're listening to News Talk 99.5 WRNO.
Baby, you a song. You made me want to roll my windows down and cruise.
This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. I am your host, James Parker. Joining studio, Dwayne Stein, chef of Mortgage Gumbo, coming up in about an hour and 15 minutes. You're listening to Florida Georgia Line in the background. They're going to be on the Saturday edition of our 2016 iHeartRadio Music Festival at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. Tickets sold out in just under an hour last Saturday. The contest where you can win your way in begins on Monday. I don't think you're eligible, Dwayne.
I'm not. I'm an employee.
Way to ruin it.
Yeah.
You know, I saw these guys in there at Bayou Country Superfest. Better than I thought they would be.
Yeah.
Plus, they were one of those bands. I recognized six of their songs. I didn't know they had six radio songs. Yeah. It was incredible.
Used to like them.
Used to? What happened? Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right.
Sorry, dude.
So sensitive.
I bleed blue.
All right, so, you know, I was looking at some, you know, we're talking about the home ownership rates being at 51-year lows.
Yep.
I don't like the fact that they got up to about 69%. So I went back and looked at the chart. Yeah, they were up around 69% for 2004, 69%, 2005, 68.9, mm-hmm. 2006, 68.8. And then in 2007, it started dwindling down significantly. That was a problem. We shouldn't have had 70% of the country living in a home that they own. Some of them should have been renters. What do you think it should be, though? Is there a right number where home ownership seems like it's a safe and stable level?
Well, I don't think that. I mean, I would love it. Listen, my goal is 100%, right? Not to sound cliche-ish. I believe everybody should be a homeowner.
I don't. But well, I don't own a mortgage company.
Right. But for the right program. See, I'm not just throwing numbers out there. Listen, there's a lot of goofy program. Listen, banks are too big to fail. Guess what? Big banks, they're back, baby. I hate to say it. They're mm-hmm. back. You know, I mean, it's there. Guess what? They're too big to fail again. You know, so the banks control this stuff. They control how aggressive we can be. They control the different types of programs that we have. And they've gotten back to a couple goofy things, no doubt about it. But with that being said, I think if the right program is there, you got to have the right loan for the right person. And more importantly, at the right time. You know, some people just, they rush into certain things. There's just different things out there that people look to do. And if they're not working with someone who is licensed and is looking out for their best interest, that's why we saw these numbers spike. And then all of a sudden, why we're now at all-time lows. Because these people that, when we were at 70% or whatever that number is.
69%, right.
And now we're at, what, 62 or whatever it is?
Yeah, 62.9. And some change.
So when you're looking at those people, look, you don't think they want to get back into that market, but they're unable because of the situation they were put into. That's why when we sit down, it's just in learning this with Gregory Ricks, we sit down and we kind of, you mentioned it earlier. Hey, we undress everything and go, let's look at where do we want to be? What do we want to do? Because if this is your first home, then again, like I just told John, regardless if I've got you pre-approved for $330,000 or not, maybe we look at this house instead because it's a stepping stone. You know, now some people are like you, James, where, hey, we got to live here. Here's why we've got to live here. And that's why we ask those questions. What is the reason? Is it school? Is it family? Is this going to be the home that you could see for life? When you move on, is it a plan to keep this as an investment property? Those are all things that go into that. So when you say what's the right number, it's just hard to tell. You know, I don't think there's a good mix, so to speak, with that. But with the programs out there, there's just way too many options that if you don't qualify for a home right now, that's even more reason for us. Is it a credit reason? What are those reasons? If it's unemployment and you just can't get a job, that's a whole different thing. But with us, again, in 20 years, I've never told somebody you're turned down. Now, have I approved everybody? Absolutely not. But what I don't do is just turn my back. I lead that horse to water, and I show them exactly what they need to do to be able to get in a home down the road. We don't just look at a FICO score and go, you're a 548, you're out, nothing you can do. Here's the things that you may need to go do, or not may. Here are the exact things you need to do to get your score up to this number to where we can qualify you for a home.
Well, all this seems it's going to be dependent on if home values cannot drop by what is that magic number where it becomes impossible to refi out? Because that was one of the thought processes when the housing boom was happening. It's like, well, what happens if some of this turns around? You know, and then the thought process would be, well, people can just refi their way out of it. But when your home equity your home value puts you underwater in your loan, there is no refi out.
No, there's not. I mean, you've got HARP, you've got a couple different things, but at that same point, you know, that's why a lot of people right now, James, with these rates that we're at, you know, flirting with these all-time lows, we're doing a ton of, if you have a VA loan or an FHA loan, we're doing a ton of what we call streamline loans. No appraisal, no income, nothing like that. We know you're in the home. We make sure that you're paying your mortgage on time. And we're putting these people, a lot of people are jumping on board going, hey, even though I'm at 4.25% and I can get down to 3.875, let me take advantage of it. Because they know this is the house that they're going to be in. And let's just do this, renew it, and take advantage of the low rates.
So without looking at their appraisal, you're relying solely on their payment history?
Yep, that's it. Absolutely, yep.
Jim and Metairie, you're next up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks, talking to James Parker and Dwayne Stein. How can we help you, sir?
Yes, sir. I was wondering, now, what is y'all's opinion? I have a home loan through GMFS, okay, out of Baton Rouge.
Yep.
And Cendlar is the servicer for their loan. They're located in New Jersey.
Right.
Y'all's opinion on Cendlar. I had a modification through Cendlar, and we had some issues, and they foreclosed on the house. They said we were, you know, maybe 8 or 9 payments behind when we were not. Mm-hmm. We were maybe 2 or 3 payments behind. So basically they sent the foreclosure and we were mailing our payments, and then all of a sudden they're sending our payments back, saying you owe, you know, $8,000-$9,000. So
right.
They sent in a modification package that we fill out. And we fill all this out. You're approved for modification, another modification thing. Anyway, they bumped the principal up $8,000.
Yes.
So is this all legal? It seems to me that this wasn't really legal. And it just seemed like it was underhanded because, I mean, I had a lot of lousy service from these people up in New Jersey.
Yeah, well, what happens to, I could tell you, Jim, ironically, my mortgage is with Cendlar Services.
What are y'all saying,
well,
Cendlar?
Cendlar is a servicer. So,
how do you spell that?
So, C-E-N-L-A-R.
Okay.
So, in other words, what happens is, like we were kind of talking about, James, all loans close with Cross Country Mortgage. They close with me, my money, everything. We keep a major percentage of those loans, but at some points we also do sell them off. Now, we even service more than we keep. Cendlar is a servicer. They don't make the loan. They service the loan. So that's where you get the notification going, hey, your loan's now with such and such. Thank you. Send your payments here. I think what Jim's talking about, and it's happened a lot, these loan modifications for the people that did get them, because so many people were turned down for these modifications a long time ago, that all they basically do is they take those payments and they pack it on the back. Okay, they take this stuff, pack it on the back, and then they go, okay, hey, here's your new balance. Here's what it is. The thing that's different now over where it used to be is when these banks now go into foreclosure and stuff, back in the day, all they did was it went to an auction. It went to someone and someone said, hey, I'm going to give you 50 cents on the dollar. And the bank said, great. You know, we make loans. We don't take home, so to speak. Super. I'll take it. I'll take my hit and move on. Now, when you go to an auction, you're competing against that bank because they want that money back because of where the housing market is right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting, so they're kind of double dipping. So what's happened to Jim is they go, all right, you know what? You want to do a loan modification? It's going to cost you this because we now know if we boot you out, we're going to be able to kind of resell that house again. It's kind of rent to own, so to speak.
Go ahead. Is it legal for them to, they said we were 8 months behind. We were not. We were only maybe 2 to 3 payments behind,
sure,
max, throughout, yeah, the whole loan that we've had this loan.
Right.
Max. And even reported it in the credit agency as being late like that. And I can't seem to make them move on anything.
And that's,
we have the payments. We have the documents. We have the canceled check. We had to go give them canceled checks to prove we made payments. And they claim we didn't make the payments, and sometimes in the face of the canceled check on the back, we said send law on the back of the check.
Yeah.
And I don't have any, it seems like I don't have any way to go.
It's,
and they still report me as, yeah, being late.
Yep.
And I really wasn't late, maybe 2 or 3 payments max, and they maxed me out for $8,000 on my
All right, so they're taking the 8 payments they say he owns them and adding it to the principal.
Right.
Well, how does get adjudicated?
Here's what happens is, poor Jim, Cendlar's got a lot more resources than poor Jim does, right? Because Jim's got to get back. He's got to get
the
work.
So you can't take him to court. They'll bury you.
Well, so what happens is,
can he refi out of that?
Whether it's legal or not, if it's a loan modification, it's just going to depend on where is he at now. Are you back current now, Jim? How long have you been back current and all those kind of things? Do you,
at least 6 months current, totally current.
Yeah, so what you're going to look at is, really what we can do is, once
you sue him.
No, well, here's what's going to happen. They're going to say prove it, and when it all comes down to it, they've destroyed your credit report, they've done all these things, and all they got to absolutely do is go, oops, my bad, I apologize.
Should I call the Attorney General's office?
Man, I don't ever try to get into all that stuff. What I would do is just try to really find somebody there that's willing to help. If you can, get a manager and just go, I need somebody to just...
I need somebody
to explain what happened here. You know, I mean, obviously there's a lot of frustration. Now, here's what I could tell you. Value of your home to what you owe on it right now. Are you upside down, Jim, or do you have some equity there, man?
I have probably $50,000 worth of equity.
So you're okay. So here's what I would tell you. Let's talk offline. Let's look at and let's put you in. What we're going to do is I'm going to kind of lead you down a path to where we can come back and beat them at their own game and get you away from those guys. You just got to make sure we've got to have a little bit more of a, is it an FHA loan or a conventional?
Hang on. We had to run. Jim, I put you on hold. We'll continue this conversation when the news break happens. We'll just pick up the phone and talk to you in the studio and we'll get your number and everything. So don't hang up, Jim. We're about to talk to you on the break. Thank you very much for your time,
Dwayne Stein.
He's coming up on Mortgage Gumbo at 1 o'clock. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. Welcome to Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. I am your host, James Parker. Gregory Ricks is out. He'll be back on Monday. I think he's doing the 100-meter hurdles in Rio this weekend. Shot put. We got 1 hour left of the show before Dwayne Stein comes back and takes over for Mortgage Gumbo. Got a lot to cover for you, though. It's been 5 years since the credit downgrade. How has the United States economy fared in the meantime? Did we fix some of our credit issues from that August 2011 downgrade? Oh, you already know what that answer is. It's still a hot... It's just a flaming pile of dog poo is what it is. Just to cut to the chase. I'll give you the details on that coming up later in the show. We've still got to break down the jobs report. Unemployment stays flat, but we're going to see if that's going to have some sort of trigger effect on whether or not the Fed wants to raise rates. Seniors, you're getting locked out of Social Security starting this week online if you don't have texting services. I know that sounds like a bad idea. It was another one. Good intentions. They just kind of, they're sloppy. They're mess. It's a clumsy system, that Social Security. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, you better give us a call. 504-260-0995. A couple other community events I want you to be aware of. Starting with our 2016 iHeartRadio Music Festival that sold out. Contest starts tomorrow. On Saturday, September 10th. I know that sounds a long ways away. September? No, that's a month away. Saturday, September 10th is the Jefferson Council on Aging Senior Moments event. It's going to be at the Chateau Country Club. For details on that, jcoa.net. Coming up a couple weeks after that, I know, again, this is 6 weeks in advance, but you might want to go ahead and mark this one on your calendar. Gleason Graw is going to be at the Gleason House Saturday, September 24th. Now, it's only $5 to get in, but it's a fundraiser for Team Gleason, and we're big fans of Team Gleason. In fact, at our Gregory Ricks Live event coming up on August 16th, we're going to be raising money this month for Team Gleason. For more information on Gleason Graw at the Gleason House, GleasonGraw.org, not .com, not .net, GleasonGraw.org. All caught up? Good. Let me tell you about this seniors getting locked out of Social Security. This is a weird story here because for some seniors, they got a rude awakening when some new security protocols were implemented on the Social Security website. That's SSA.gov, Social Security Administration.gov, SSA.gov. And they have some cool little tools you can use there. But a new code is required each time you log in because it expires after 10 minutes. So the new process, or the old process, is you log in with your username and password and boom, you get in. Now you log in with your username and password, it has to text you that code to your phone, then you enter that code on the website to get access to your account. So if you don't have a cell phone that receives text, you can't log into your account. So there's not a whole lot of people out there left that don't have a cell phone who takes text, but there's some. And for those people, There's a big problem. You can't log into your account right now. The only other option they have is they can send it to your Facebook. Now that sounds pretty weird. Is that did I read that right? Or are people just griping on the Facebook? I think they're just griping on the Facebook. Yeah, I did. I said that wrong. My apologies. That's your only option, is getting sent a text to your cell phone to log into Social Security. I understand they're having some security issues, and this makes it a little harder to get into. But again, it doesn't mean that they shouldn't be accommodating people with text. It means they should be accommodating people that don't have text. How do those people get in? So some people just don't use a cell phone for texting because they don't want to. The problem is a lot of people don't use a cell phone for texting because they can't afford to. So now this Social Security Administration is between a rock and a hard place. An executive order was issued by the current administration requiring federal agencies to provide more secure authentication for their online services. And that's bad news, because you don't get to put your own Social Security account server in a closet in your New York townhouse. You actually have to use the one the government provides you. So this makes it tough. Now, it doesn't prevent anyone, but if you have an online account where, you know, people, you go to change your address, start or change direct deposit information on of your payments, or to request a replacement Social Security card, you're going to need that code. If you haven't retired yet, you'll be able to, you need it to log in to see an estimate of future benefit payments. If you don't have a login account, you can contact the agency by phone, email, or by visiting physically, getting off your butt and going to the local Social Security office. I don't like doing that. Why do I have to drive to a building? It's 2016. I should be able to do this on a computer. So we have about 26 million accounts that have been created online via Social Security. And they're reviewing the security change. I don't know if they're going to keep it around, but for now, there's an executive order that says they have to do it. So this could be easily rescinded. In fact, this could be easily rescinded coming January 22nd of next year, when whoever the next president is changes his mind, or if someone can get this article from CNN Money up to Obama, maybe he can change his mind on that part of the executive order. As of 2015, 92% of U.S. adults own a cell phone, and that includes 78% of Americans age 65 and older. But that's bad news. That means 22% of the people who are in the Social Security realm are going to be locked out of their accounts online. You'll still be able to go to the office and do it. You'll still be able to make phone calls and do it. You're just not going to be able to make those changes online. So you're not really locked out of your account in total, just the convenience of being able to do it from the comfort of your own home and your underwear, if you so choose. Now, when you want to take a broader look at the stock market here and how they're doing, nearly half of all stocks listed on the S&P 500 had released their second quarter earnings already. And it's been a mixed bag. Majority of companies are beating the average expectations coming out of the analyst from Wall Street. But that headline's kind of misleading, because the expectations have gone down 3.8% from the last quarter. So you're beating negative expectations. That's not the same as winning. That's not the same as being in the positive direction. So this is now marking the fourth straight quarterly decline. So corporate earnings are in a recession that began in the third quarter of 2015. Of the reasons driving the contraction in earnings, corporations are complaining that they got plenty of headwinds that are keeping them from robust growth, including consistently low interest rates. This is a problem. The fact that the Fed keeps refusing to raise the rates makes it tough. That's one of the problems that they're having. Another one is a strong U.S. dollar, because you see a big swath of corporate profits. I believe it's up to 40% of folks in the S&P make revenue overseas. Strong dollar hurts that. Now you also have stubbornly low oil prices, which for some companies is a good thing. If you're a delivery company, or if you're a trucking company, or if you're FedEx or UPS or an airline, that's a good thing. But for so many Americans out there, especially in the Southeast Louisiana area and anyone else who works in the oil patch, that's an overall negative, because I mean, those oil servicing companies and the people who supply them, and if you are in one of these oil patch towns and you see work dry up, the restaurants are getting hurt, the lawyers are getting hurt, the shops, grocery stores, everything's getting hurt along with that. Plus, we draw so much of that money from overseas into America because we're producing more here. So now we have markets hovering near all-time highs. We have corporate recession and earnings. And it's another mixed bag of info. Yes, a majority of companies are beating analyst average expectations, but the expectations are in contraction territory. So we'll keep an eye on that for you. It's so hard to decipher through this. That's why I like talking to Gregory Ricks on a regular basis, you know, six times a week. We mentioned this on the Daily Wrap version of Winning at Life. We talked about this, I think this was on Tuesday's show, or Thursday's show. And that's the fact that internet speeds in the United States just passed a milestone. And this is fantastic for me, because we finally passed the average download speed for broadband internet users in the United States, went past 50 megabits this year. 50 megabits per second. That is such a beautiful sounding number to me, because the ugly sound was from our last 56K modem. This. Remember this sound? This is the login algorithm of a 56K modem. I don't know. Did you ever have a 28.8 modem or a 14.4 modem? It has one of these little login sequences, but it sounds different than this. And you can tell by listening to which sequence, what type of modem the person has. That's some nerdy territory. But to spell that out for you, when you were trying to log into your dial-up AOL account in 1998, that's the noise you heard. That meant the data was being sent 56,000 bits per second were being shoveled across your phone line. Now, we knew that was it for the modem technology, because the analog switchers in the phone company can only carry the signal so fast. And so we knew we were going to have to break out to something else when we got to 56Ks on the modems. And we figured it out. But do the math, 56K, 56,000, let's just say it's 50,000. If you multiply that by 10, now you're to 500,000. If you multiply that by 100, now you're to 5 million. So now you're in megabits, you're at 5 megabits per second. We are 10 past that. We are at 50 megabits per second, average download speed for a broadband user in the United States. That is 1,000 times faster than it was when last time you heard that sound, last time you heard that nasty little scratchy 56K modems. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that wonderful? So you remember when you first tried to download that first MP3 and it took you 3 hours? Now in 3 hours, you can download 1,000 of the exact same size MP3. Without this, there is no Netflix. Without this, there is no cloud storage and online backups. Without this, it's going to be a lot harder to listen to us live on the iHeartRadio app with thousands of other people tuning in. I'm James Parker, 504-260-0995. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. Welcome to Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. That's U2, one of the artists from our 2016 iHeartRadio Music Festival. They're going to be headlining the Friday show, September 23rd at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. Contest to win your way in starts Monday. Tune into 99.5 WRNO. I think we're going to have a chance to win every hour, any of your iHeart media stations. So that includes our cluster. Let me brag on our sister stations for a minute. We got News Talk 99.5 WRNO, clearly in the room I'm in. If I go to one room to the right, it's Fox Sports 1280 on the AM side. If you go to the next room on the other side of those guys, that's WNOE 101.1, your country leader. You go to the left from our studio, it's Voodoo 104. Go down the hall. There's 98.5 WYLD FM, the number one station in the market. The number two station in the market is next door to them. Those guys in the other corner, Q93. What, Angie, what?
Just a little side note. You will be able to hear me next week. I'm filling in on Voodoo 104 from 10 until 3 o'clock, and we're going to be talking a lot about this contest starting Monday.
This has nothing to do with you. Don't insert yourself in there. We also have 940 AM, Wild for Jesus. WILD AM is in the building. And Rock 96.3 in the building. And I noticed Rock 96.3 is... started putting a little more toadies in their rotation, so I think they're getting a little more listening time from old Parker right here. 96. And you know, I heard this last week. Someone said, we need a rock station in New Orleans. Dude, we have one. We have one. It doesn't reach the North Shore that well. You listen online, you listen via the iHeartRadio app if you'd like. But that's, we all have the contest starting on Monday, so you can win your way into the 2016 iHeartRadio Music Festival. So, yesterday was an anniversary. Did you get me anything? No, of course you didn't. It was the anniversary, the five-year anniversary since the United States credit was downgraded by the S&P from the top rating of AAA to now we are AA-, I believe is what it is. So, I guess we're a step down from going to the majors. That's what that sounds like. But since August 5th, 2011... the yield on the U.S. 10-year Treasury note has fallen from 2.75% to 1.45%. Since then, the S&P has gained 102% on a total return basis. This sounds like not too bad of a recovery for the S&P, but boy, those interest rates being so low, what a pain in the butt that is. But did we learn our lesson from the credit downgrade? Because what's the point? What is the message that that S&P was trying to send? A Standard & Poor's was saying, listen, United States, you no longer have the most pristine, impeccable credit rating. We're taking you down a notch. What are they telling? They're telling you, you need to get your fiscal house in order. They're telling you, if you want to be back in our top graces, they go, look, we're still in their good graces. We haven't defaulted on anything. But if you want us to get back to the damn near perfect rating, you got to get your fiscal house in order. Well, how have we done since then? We haven't. We don't have our fiscal house in order at all. We are no more likely to be able to pay down our ridiculous debt than we were in 2011. In fact, we're 5 years further down the rabbit hole, and our debt has increased. We are now up to $20 trillion in debt. That's what the country owes someone. Some of it goes to us. Some of it goes to overseas investors. Some of it goes to intra-governmental borrowing. That's what they like to call it. For you and me, this is taking money out of your left pocket and putting it in your right pocket. But the deficit going back in the wrong direction now. You saw it recovering a little bit, but it's just been a disaster. I mean, these last two presidents, if you ever had some sort of inkling of fiscal conservatism, I don't know how you could approve and pull the lever for either one of the two major parties. That's just something that blows my mind. The one thing that I think is the most important power given to Congress every year is the one they're doing the worst with, the money. You know, and nowhere in the Constitution does it say we have we've given Congress the authority to break down the minutia and tell us if we can or cannot text while driving, or if we can or cannot set our bathroom laws in the way we see fit, or who we have to make wedding cakes for. I mean, and both sides of the aisle are so guilty. They're worried about the most petty of things. Meanwhile, $20 trillion in debt is accumulating under us. You know, this is how countries collapse. Countries don't collapse because someone was texting while driving, or because someone wrote the bathroom rules in a way that other people found more constricting. No, there's two ways countries collapse. It's either from a military takeover, which is not going to happen to us. I mean, what standing army is going to come invade America and march on D.C.? It's just not happening. But the other, more likely, more common, and more probable scenario for the United States is a fiscal collapse, and it starts with inflation and debt, because the debt leads to the inflation, and then you got a big problem. If we don't learn history... everyone's worried about someone's emails, or someone said something about a gold star dad, or someone said a lie, and this guy lies. No, you lie. No, you lie. No, you lie. Meanwhile, in the background, just debt, 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 debt. No one's talking about it. That's driving me insane. So I think with a 5-year look back window, you can say, did we learn our lessons from having our credit downgraded for the United States of America? I think the result is absolutely not. No lessons have been learned. We haven't had a balanced budget since then. We haven't curtailed spending. We've increased spending. We've increased the deficits. We've increased the debt. Everything's still going in the wrong direction. Well, except unemployment's doing a little bit better. We'll give them that. GDP's grown a little bit. We'll give them that. But that makes it even worse. We even have a bigger economy with which we have more resources with which to deal with this debt. And it's still growing. Idiots. You can either start listening to people like myself now, or you can pay a higher price later down the road. Hey, I'm going to do what I can. I'm not going to feel bad. But if you look at any single month at random to invest in the S&P, during the 25 years ending on June 30th, you achieved a total positive return of 65%. Total positive return 65% of the time. If you extend your investment time horizon to just 1 year, you achieve a positive return 81% of the time. Here's where it gets weird. If you extend that horizon out to 2 years, it goes down to 80% of the time you get a positive return. How on earth does that work out? Because markets are not predictable. There is not a there is no guarantee. If you put some money in the stock market and you wait a long enough time period and you take it out, you're going to make money. Not so. Just doesn't happen that way. Another way, another great illustration of how hard it is, how damn near impossible it is to make predictions accurately, consistently on the stock market. The number one performing individual stock within the S&P 500 during the first 7 months of this year, it's up 144%. That same stock last year for the entirety of 2015 lost 5%. That's right. The biggest winner of this year was a loser last year. Makes it tough, doesn't it? It was ranked 273rd out of the 500 stocks on the S&P in its performance last year. And it's number one this year. You want to do the opposite? The number one performing stock in the S&P 500 last year, I believe they're talking about Netflix here. Or wait, no, Netflix aren't. I think they're in the S&P. Whatever the top performing stock of the S&P for 2015 was, it gained 135%. That's one great investment. If you got it right in 2015, you won. If you looked in January at the best performing stocks of 2015, you said, okay, well, that one was number one. I'm going to sink a bunch of money into it. So it may not be number one again, but it'll still probably look with all this momentum and the record-breaking year it had, you know, being number one, it'll still probably end up in positive territory. Wrong. It lost 20.2% in the first 7 months of 2016. And after it was ranked number one in the S&P for the entirety of the calendar year of 2015, so far for 2016, it ranks number 481 out of 500 stocks. There's only 18 stocks that are doing worse. 18 stocks out of 500 that are doing worse this year than the number one stock did last year. You still think you can handle your own money better than a financial advisor? You still think you have all the tools available at your disposal to make these damn near impossible predictions? And why would you? Why would you want to do that? Why? Look, turn it over to a professional, a guy that's got a team. He's got people who are trained, who watch the markets all day, every day. And then you can do what? Whatever you want to do. You can go, maybe if you want to get if you want to continue working, that's cool. You know, pursuing your dream. Maybe do that job that you wish you could have done earlier. You know, whether it's being a photographer or a painter or whatever fun stuff. Work on cars. Wouldn't that be great? You just hang out with your family. Go swimming with your grandkids for 4 hours a day while they're visiting in from out of town. That's what you need to be worried about. Not trying to go through this minefield, because it is a losing battle and you can try it yourself. Hey, maybe you'll win. Most people don't. And we got to clean up a lot of messes. And the sooner you can stop making messes and get it over here to Gregory Ricks and Associates, the easier the cleanup will be, the less severe the damage will be. The trust fund backing Social Security retirement benefits took in payroll contributions that exceeded retirement benefit payments, means they were taking in more money than they were paying out, for the 26 years between 84 and 2009. But since 2010, Not trying to freak you out here, but this is what the math says. Benefits paid out have exceeded payroll taxes collected. So since 2010, we have been paying out more than we are paying in. In 2015, the last year, of course, we have a full year's worth of numbers for, covered workers paid in $679 billion in payroll taxes, but retirees got out $742 billion in taxes. That trust fund's getting dwindled. They're either going to have to raise your taxes or cut benefits. Something's got to change. This is not going to be lasting too long, and it looks like it's all going to come to head sometime around 2032. So are you going to make it then? I'll be here around then. I'll probably still be doing radio. We'll talk about it then, too. If you have any questions, financially speaking or otherwise, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO.
The contents of this show are meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not meant to take place of your attorney, accountant, tax professional, personal trainer, football coach, interior decorator, or those fortune tellers at Jackson Square. Please consult a financial advisor before making all investment decisions. Now, back to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Gregory Ricks and Associates, registered investment advisory firm. Why do you do that? Why do you look at me when I say that? Aren't we supposed to say that at the bottom of the hour every time? I do what I want. Hey, sad news. Pete Fountain, New Orleans clarinet playing celebrity. The only one I know. Can you name another clarinet player on the planet? And not the guy who was sitting third chair next to you in middle school band, but professional clarinet. It's the only one I know. Pete Fountain, dead, age 86.
Yeah, that's huge for New Orleans. I mean, he is such a New Orleans icon, celebrity, whatever you want to call it. I mean, he is the best, one of the best flute players, like you said, ever.
Clarinet.
Well, he did several. Clarinet was the big one. You're right.
You want to know, he's not just a New Orleans thing. When I was growing up, so old, you didn't have your own music. You couldn't turn on YouTube or whatever. So you were stuck with whatever albums your parents had. Even though tapes were big, my parents had albums when they were growing up or in the 70s and whatnot. So Little Parker here in the 80s and 90s, that's what I had to listen to. My dad had a Pete Fountain album. And I grew up in East Texas. And he grew up in El Paso, Texas. Pete Fountain was out there. He had a Pete Fountain album. Okay. Does anyone else have an album from a clarinet player ever? Can you name another local clarinetist that's selling albums to people in El Paso, Texas in the 70s? Yeah, he was big. I think he's bigger than people locally give him credit for. You think he's huge here? No, he was just big, period. Absolutely. I think I still have that album because I stole half my dad's stuff. He didn't have a record player anymore. It's 2016. I'm the only idiot with one of those. But we knew he had been in bad health for a while. Friend of the show, Lisa Bakke, are they just husband and wife, or are they boyfriend and girlfriend? I don't want to get it wrong.
Boyfriend and girlfriend.
Okay, yeah. Lisa Bakke's boyfriend is in the Pete Fountain half-assed walking club. And I'm saying half-fast with a T on it. Sounds like I'm saying something else, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Half-fast.
He was part of it as of last year. He didn't walk, but he was
right. They drove
lifted.
Him. They put. Mm-hmm. They had a throne set up for him in the back of a truck, and they toted him around like that. But I guess that's going to live on. It's going to be a pretty sad sight this Mardi Gras to see the Pete Fountain's club without Pete Fountain actually being a part of it. So yeah, very sad to see him go. Hey, he made it to 86. We should all be so lucky. Chances are I'm not going to make it that long, but. Best wishes go out to his family and his friends and people who are part of his walking club. And I know a few people that just worship the guy. So, sad day. We lost another New Orleans royalty. All that means, though, is there's a seat open at the table. So, I'm thinking me and Gregory Ricks, we could be into New Orleans royalty at some point. I want to be at Bayou Boogaloo and someone's selling one of those tiles, you know, those little ceramic tiles that has like a Winning It Life logo on it here in 20 years. Wouldn't that be great?
Well, you're definitely at celebrity status, but then again, you know, you have to go, 80 years or less, you know, to get to where Pete Fountain was. But I think we're on a good roll after, 6 years? Yeah, we're getting there.
This guy's way more huge than I am. No one's buying James Parker anything in El Paso, Texas. So If only we could all be that successful. And just a nice guy. You ever hear anyone say anything bad about Pete Fountain? Like, well, you know, backstage one time he was a jerk, or I heard him yelling at his personal assistant. Never.
I met him. I got a chance to meet him one Mardi Gras, and it was after the walk, and he looked like he was tired, but everyone kept running to him, oh, Pete. And sure enough, he shook my hand and was the nicest guy ever.
Sad day. I want to remind you, our next Gregory Ricks live event is coming up August 16th. That's a Tuesday, not this Tuesday, but next. Ruth's Chris in Metairie, 6:30 p.m. Go ahead and start reserving your seats now. We put a couple extra chairs in there to accommodate the bigger crowds that we've been having lately. But that is no guarantee that this is not going to fill up pretty soon. To reserve your seat, 504-832-9200. If you didn't write that down, you can remember GregoryRicks.com. Or if you get the Gregory Ricks and Associates app, you're just a couple of thumb smashes away from reserving your seat at our next event. You'll meet the Total Wealth Authority, get a presentation from Gregory. There's going to be some food involved. And we'll just find out if we're right for you and you're right for us. It's just it's an educational thing. We call it a financial first date. Also want to remind you, coming up in about 25 minutes, we're going to turn it over to Mortgage Gumbo with Dwayne Stein. Now that we got all of our business or non-business out the way, let's get to for real business. One thing we didn't talk about when we were breaking down the jobs report earlier in this show, and we were talking about it in Friday, yesterday's Winning at Life, the Daily Wrap edition, is even though unemployment stayed flat, we had some modest job growth. It wasn't gangbusters, but it was in positive territory. And it was a little, just tiny bit above of where it needs to be to beat out to the population growth. Because we added 400,000 new people into the working age population, most of which were 17-year-olds who turned 18, some of which were immigrants who just moved here and got legal status. Some people entering the workforce were previously discouraged workers, or you know, you have all kinds of factors thrown in there. But the problem is still sticking around with the long-term unemployed. And if the long-term unemployed is still a big problem, and you have wage growth not keeping up with where it needs to be, you have a fight for the hearts and minds of the people working at the desk of the Fed. Is the economy looking good enough that they could possibly raise the federal funds rate in September or October? Or is the economy doing so bad and there's enough bad information out there because the corporate profit recession is huge? Does that mean it's possible that they could go backwards and actually take back that quarter point that they gave us last December, coming up in one of the two meetings in September and October? If you look at the Bank of England, they gave us a little clue of what they're thinking over there. They actually took their tiny little rate hike because they're kind of mirroring what we did. They took that back. Boy, if we do that, that is not a good sign. This economy has had its training wheels on for 8 years now. We've had plenty of chances to take the training wheels off and let this economy roll on its own. And if it falls down, it falls down. It needs to fall down at some point. We got to shed the dead weight. And without recessions, you know, recessions have a function. Recessions make the economy stronger, because it gets rid of the dead weight. The companies who aren't keeping up, the companies who aren't making enough money, the companies who aren't saving enough money, the companies who are not robust enough to weather a slight pullback in economic activity, those go by the wayside and the stronger ones remain. It's sort of economic Darwinism. And we're preventing the survival of the fittest mechanism, we're preventing that from running its course. We're keeping around dead weight companies. You know, this too big to fail idea makes no sense to me. No one's too big to fail. Well, what about this bank? Let it fail. It should fail. Let that be a lesson to the other big banks. Don't do what the failed bank did. But without that mechanism in place for companies to fail, they have less incentive to act responsibly, to build up the most robust company, to hedge their risk, to maybe even not even take risk, to do the right thing, to stick with the basics. That's such the wrong incentive we're sending these people. But I don't know how the Fed is going to react to this, because the Fed is going to seize on whatever they wanted to do anyway and come up with the excuse for it after the fact. And the weirdest part is, yeah, we do have some job growth. We have slight wage growth, but nothing to get excited about, not where it's supposed to be. But how does even some of that good news, how does that mix with the GDP numbers that we got recently? 1% GDP growth for the first half of 2016. I tell you, Ben, it is tough to walk through this minefield and try and interpret what is going to go on in the minds of their heads or in the minds of the Fed people. My guess, they don't raise it before the election. I'm taking the very cynical, skeptical, kind of a negative view, but I've been proven right by the Fed so many times already, even over the best wishes of Gregory Ricks across from me, who was looking at market fundamentals. He was looking at the economic factors. He was looking at just the technicals and the basics. I was looking at the politics. I was being cynical. I was right. He was wrong. If that happens again, they're not going to raise again. There's a chance that they wouldn't do this in September, but I think there's a decent little chance coming up in October. They're going to take that quarter point back. They're going to lower the rate again to rock bottom. Why? They're not worried about the economy. They're not worried about the health of the and strength of the U.S. dollar. They're not worried about inflation. They're not even worried about employment. They're worried about who's going to get elected in November. That's what this is all about. This is what happens when you put the economy in the hands of the government, in the hands of politicians. And don't tell me the feds, though, they're not politicians, they're not elected officials. Yeah, but they're controlled, hired and fired and praised and scorned by elected officials. You don't think that's weighing on their mind? This is what happens when you don't leave it to the private sector. Politics get involved. And while capitalism can be ugly and there can be some winners and losers, it's not as bad as politics. Political self-interest is not nobler than economic self-interest. Another thing we're keeping our eye on is when we're talking about Social Security. We had mentioned that a little bit in the last segment. But as it stands right now in 2016, there are 2.8 workers paying payroll taxes for every one Social Security beneficiary who is receiving benefits. This is not going to work. There will be an estimated, by 2030, there will be an estimated 2.3 workers paying payroll taxes for every one Social Security beneficiary in 2030. That means if you extrapolate it out, say there's 100 covered workers that are paying payroll taxes, there's going to be 44 beneficiaries for every 100 workers. So think about it like this. Not only do you have to go to work and be productive enough to make enough money for yourself and your family and to save some money, not just cover all your bills and the food and stuff, but, you know, a little lagniappe on top of that and maybe get a car. And God forbid if we have some luxuries in our life, you have to pay enough to fund the government at the state, local, federal levels. And you have to pay almost half of some retiree's Social Security check. That's what comes out of your backside every month. It doesn't matter what you produce. The rest of that stuff is going to get paid for. You're just going to be left with whatever's left over after they pay for the state, local, and federal taxes, and the Social Security guy that you got to put on your back and carry him out. It is not looking too good with these entitlements, I'm telling you. There's going to be some changes coming. Sooner the better, because the longer we wait, the worse it's going to get. When we come back up, let's take a short break. Coming up in 2 minutes, I got a couple more stats I'm going to run by you. We're going to talk a little bit about oil. We're going to talk a little bit more about houses. And if you have a financial situation, you're not quite sure what to do, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. I am your host, James Parker. Gregory Ricks out on assignment. I think he's doing the kayak in Rio right now. Hey, if you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, you better give us a call, 504-260-0995. I just got one segment left. And then coming up next, Mortgage Gumbo with Dwayne Stein, the chef. If you have some real estate questions, mortgage lending questions, you may just want to tap the brakes on that one and wait about 15 minutes. I'm going to remind you right now that our next Gregory Ricks Live event, August 16th, that's not this Tuesday, but next, Ruth's Chris Ed Metairie, 6:30 p.m. This month's charity is Team Gleason. I also want to remind you, Women Winning at Life is having their next event Wednesday, September 14th. This is primarily for existing clients who happen to be female, and this gives them a forum to talk amongst themselves, amongst like-minded people. Because I don't know if you looked around, most people are not prepared for retirement. Most people are not able to do what a lot of our clients do, and that is set up a system by which they can give themselves income in retirement and live above just that piddly little Social Security check. They can live above just having a few bucks in the savings account, and they're just going to spend it down until they run out. And you need to hang out with like-minded people who are going through some of the same issues you're going through. And there's not a whole lot of places you can go where you're going to be in a room full of people like yourself who are going through some of the same problems in life. I mean, we all like hanging around younger people because they're energetic and they're youthful and they make us feel younger. But really, are you going to talk with a 24-year-old about when to turn on Social Security? What do they know? Nothing. Are you going to talk to a 24-year-old about how to set up a living trust because you have a special needs kid? And they don't know. They're only good for so much. You got to be around like-minded people. That's one of the reasons we do the Women Winning at Life events. Another one is we found out when we kick all the men out the room, women ask better questions. Part of that's because women are shy. I think a big part of that is because guys can be jerks because we have this sort of alpha male thing. Well, excuse me, little missy. I know a little bit about that. Forget it. We just found out it's amazingly beneficial. I can't even describe it. You got to go. But you don't have to be a client to go either. If you're a woman who's thinking about getting involved, and this may be your avenue in. Call the office. Find out if it's right for you. 504-832-9200. Or you can go to GregoryRicks.com. I hate the last segment of the show because now I have to go through the pile and start deleting stuff. Like, what am I not going to be able to get to? Like the bunnies. We got to make fun of the bunny situation in Lafreniere Park during the weekday version, Winning at Life, the Daily Wrap. I guess I can do a short version. We have an issue now with unwanted bunnies being dumped in Lafreniere Park. Captain Obvious over there, Angie, the producer, said, well, you know what happens is people get bunnies for Easter and then they don't want them a few months later and they put them in the park. Of course. Of course that's where bunnies come from. What is this? Is this a bunny-related song? Oh, this is the bunny hop? How am I supposed to know that? Oh, okay, I see what you're doing. Well, that's a stretch. We'll take it. So I saw this report on WGNO, and now in Metairie at Lafreniere Park, we have feral packs of bunnies that are ravaging the park. Is that the cutest thing you've ever heard? I want a feral pack of bunnies. I want a big herd of wild bunnies running through my neighborhood. What a gift. I would be telling people, hey, dump some more unwanted bunnies in Lafreniere Park. Someone go out and feed the bunnies so they don't all starve to death. You know, I don't want a bunch of bunny carcasses out there. But bunnies, how cute is that? Angie, what?
No, I mean, you're right. That is adorable until, we can't feed them or they get attacked by other animals or whatever horrible things can happen to these poor, beautiful creatures.
Well, look, even for the ones, because domesticated bunnies have issues because they'll walk right up to a feral cat or some other animal. It's like, hey, lunch, and eat it. But we're feeding other animals. You know, it's a circle of life. Now we're going to have, you know, happier feral cats and, you know, maybe some happier coyotes out in Lafreniere Park. They don't have coyotes there yet, do they? I remember they had a couple in City Park. Remember when they saw a couple of those out by the golf course there? So it's kind of not fair. These poor domestic rabbits are now being forced to fend for themselves. And we're being told that they talked to a vet out in Metairie, some guy named Dr. Gregory Rich, who may or may not be rich, but he is a Gregory. He said the bunny population is now spinning out of control at Lafreniere Park. That is so adorable.
See, just don't tell the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office, because last time we had a problem with animals breeding too much where they're neutral rats, and they actually were able to go at night and hunt them down to help the population because it was a problem. I don't want to see that happen to the bunnies.
Why not?
Aw.
What do you mean, aw?
It's like, I mean, come on.
What, that's lunch. You ever eaten a bunny?
A neutral rat is ugly and, you know, looks like a rodent. But like you said, the cute bunnies, we're going to have to do something.
So you don't care about the well-being of animals, just cute animals.
Exactly.
So that's a very American answer. I like that. Bunnies, to me, are adorable, and they're food. I'd eat a bunny. I'd eat a bunny in a second. I have eaten a bunny. I mean, eaten multiple bunnies.
Yeah, I would too, though. That's different.
Well, now they're being concerned with the reproductive issues that come with rabbits. Because you know what rabbits reproduce like?
Like rabbits?
Yeah, like rabbits, exactly. All right, so stop dumping your bunnies in Lafayette Park, but I just want to like lay down on the grass in Lafayette Park and have like a herd of bunnies just hop over me, you know, like hop on my stomach and my legs and stuff, just be surrounded by bunnies.
You say that, but some bunnies are mean.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are. If you don't pick them up the right way, I had to almost claw my lip off.
Oh, shut up.
True story.
I'll punch a bunny in the face. Back to some financial news here. The operating oil rig count in the United States was 698 as of the end of last year. So we're looking at December 31st of 2015. Then it fell for the first 20 weeks of 2016. And we documented that in fascinating fashion here on Winning at Life. So between the beginning of 2016 and May 20th, it bottomed out at 404. So it lost almost half the rigs just in the first half of this year. Now, more recently, that number, the price of oil got above $40 a barrel. And what happened? Well, we started poking them holes right back in the ground. Oil rig count has now increased each of the last five consecutive weeks. Actually, I think it went down. Did it go down this week? For 5 weeks after the bottom out, though, it went back up. So I believe as of the end of July, we had 463 operating rigs. According to that Baker Hughes rig count, they're the guys who do such a great job keeping track of that. So it was a rush to end the oil industry at the beginning of the year. Now they've been poking new holes back in the ground. And we talked about that on the Daily Wrap version, too. Some of the new fracking techniques have increased our recoverable oil per hole exponentially in just the last 10 years. The one stat I can remember off the top of my head because it was so profound, 10 years ago, if you went out into the West Texas Permian Basin and you poked a hole in the ground and you started pumping oil, you know, that first day, you get 100% is the max capacity. That's the most oil you're going to get out of that at any given time throughout the life of the wells when it's totally full. It makes sense. After 4 months, that production rate had declined 90%. So oil is only coming out of the ground at 10% of the rate it was on day one. By 2012, they had that down to 31%. Instead of a 90% attrition rate. Now they got it down to 18%. The production decline after the first 4 months. That means out of each hole we're poking in the ground, we're getting so much more oil per hole that the production costs are going down. And now it's thought that some of these oil companies can survive, at least the ones on shore, not the offshore rigs, or not if you got to go to Alaska or the tar sands or anything bizarre like that. But even for regular old fracking, if you go over to the Permian Basin, we're looking at somewhere around $20 a barrel. So one estimate was as low as 18. Now that was the low lier. But if you can be profitable at $25, $30 a gallon, these guys are a gallon, a barrel. These guys are going to break OPEC. The OPEC's little idea where they said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have a glut in the oil supply, and we're going to destroy the United States oil industry and take their market share. This is going to be the worst mistake they ever made. They basically forced everyone in the United States to focus on how to extract more oil. All the research and development dollars stop going to hanging out in the Gulf on rigs and platforms out there. You can't do that huge expense. You can't have a $600 million rig floating out there just to get some oil out the ground. But when you stop spending money on that and you spend it on R&D to get the best prop and the best fracking fluid, oh my goodness, OPEC can barely survive at those rates. So they may have destroyed themselves. They may have tested the United States oil industry. They may have tried to put it out of business, and it turned out being the worst decision they ever made. And isn't that the story of America? How many countries and how many civilizations in years past said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to take the United States down a peg, and they ended up regretting it. Basically all of them. A couple other things I want to run by you before Dwayne takes over. The median sales price of a new home sold nationwide during June of 2016 was $306,700, which means I'm not quite the middle class, I think is what that means. I'm on the cusp. I'm somewhere in that gray area around the median sell price of a new home. Well, I guess mine's not new. I just can't afford that. So the median sales price of an existing home sold nationwide during June of 2016, $247,700. Thus, the premium paid for a new home So that's new home versus existing home. If you look at the median sales price, 24%. The exact same home with the exact same square footage in the exact same neighborhood, if it's brand spanking new, is worth 24% more than its twin that is not brand spanking new. I don't know why, but the numbers like that just fascinate me. To all get out. And I just thought that would be a good walk into my buddy Dwayne Stein, because you're about to get an hour of mortgage goodness coming up. In the meantime, remember our next Gregory Ricks Live event is coming up next Tuesday, August 16th. Ruth, Chris, and Metairie. Go ahead and sign up for that. 504-832-9200. Go to GregoryRicks.com or download the Gregory Ricks and Associates app to reserve your seat for that. In the meantime, remember the time you spend listening to the show. Check out the podcast, WRNO. And tune into the weekday version, the Winning at Life Daily Wrap, on this station, 7 p.m. Monday through Friday. I'm James Parker. This has been Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO.